feelings, the sometimes almost palpable sense that some people in politics and the media are actually hoping for violent riots this summer. You remember the last lot, 72% of British people thought the sentences for those convicted of rioting were either fair or not harsh enough. 87% said the people who cleaned up after the riots represent the real Britain. And when it comes to the men who were actually arrested for violence during last summer's riots, what percentage of them do you think had previously been reported for domestic abuse? I'll give you a clue. It's pretty high.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, events to mark England's historic win at Euro 2025 will begin with a Downing Street reception later. The Lionesses beat the world champions Spain 3-1 on penalties in Basel last night to lift the European trophy for a second time running. The King says they're a source of great pride. Former England striker Rachel Yankees told LBC it was a tense conclusion to the tournament.
There's so many stories and emotions that you can come out of this team. I think Hannah Hampton was fantastic yesterday, in usually penalty shootouts. It's all about the strikers and who's striking that ball. But the goalkeepers for both teams, I thought, were exceptional. They made some fantastic saves and Hannah was brilliant.
An open-top bus parade is due to take place in central London tomorrow. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is expected to dominate Keir Starmer's talks with Donald Trump later. The Prime Minister is due to travel to Mr. Trump's Turnberry Golf Resort in South Ayrshire. Keir is under growing pressure from some MPs to recognise a Palestinian state. The Business Secretary, Jonathan Reynolds, was asked by LBC about the prospect of American support for such a move.
There are lots of countries around the world that already recognise a Palestinian state. It obviously hasn't stopped the horrific scenes that have been on our newspapers and televisions for months now years now. And so it has to be in a way which is meaningful. You can only do this once. I mean, the US, I think, has probably got a different position to us at present, but I do think they want to see this conflict end.
Experts have warned that many major pornography websites are ignoring new online safety rules. An LBC investigation has found at least 50 still accessible to children in the UK, despite a requirement for highly effective age checks. The regulator Ofcom says it's actively assessing compliance. Professor Claire McGinn is an expert in the regulation of pornography at the University of Durham.
We would not be as bothered about young people viewing pornography were it not for the sexually violent, racist and misogynistic nature of the content. And that is what we really need to tackle. Rape pornography is still on these websites that should not be there.
Nurses in England are expected to overwhelmingly reject a proposed 3.6% pay rise. The Royal College of Nursing has been balloting its members, with the results due to be published later this week. Resident doctors in England are midway through their five-day strike in a row over pay. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 15 points at 91.35. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather largely dry and bright with some good sunny spells, but showers developing in northern Scotland, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
What makes a steak beautifully tender? Well, there's a secret ingredient. Patience. At Tesco, we mature our finest Aberdeen Angus sirloin steaks for 35 days. You see, the longer we wait, the more deliciously tender they become. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now we just sit back and wait. For 35 days. Tesco. Every little helps. Available in selected larger stores.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10. I've had this one bubbling for a while, and I hope, obviously, like everybody sensible, that there is no repeat this summer of the hideous violence that we saw last summer during the Farage riots. But you probably sense, as I do, that there are people in both politics and the media who are finding it increasingly hard to camouflage the fact that they really want riots. Some of the newspaper coverage now has moved into cheerleading territory, almost. Something that, I don't know how naive this makes me sound, Something that I never thought I'd see. And so much of the coverage, including from people of whom you might have expected better, seems to be deliberately ignoring quite a lot of the evidential material that you need to form an honest opinion. And do you know, as soon as I say those words out loud, I spot the pattern. There's a danger of being a bit of a stuck record, but if you take 2016 as the moment when British politics fully reflected the idea that the facts didn't matter, if you could just stoke people's feelings enough. Tabloid journalism had always concentrated more on feelings than facts, but it had never actually infected the body politic to a point where a plurality could be persuaded to vote for something that didn't actually exist, to vote for what was observably untrue. And rather than back down after that and sort of think, what a wonderful win, there's a sense, a growing sense for me, that the people who stoked Brexit or Boris Johnson or Liz Truss or austerity or whatever it may be, they're on a train that they can't control. That they have to keep feeding the same appetites that fed all of those fact-free phenomena that fed those feelings trumping facts at every turn. You get it a bit with Trump. Trump's a wonderful example, actually. People who are now pretending to believe that protecting the women and children of this country is such an urgent priority that they are getting pretty close to endorsing the torching of hotels are also quite often big and even public admirers of a man who boasts and has boasted on tape about the tactics he deploys when he is sexually assaulting women, to take the man at his own word. So they don't care, really, about the things they claim to care about. If they did, they probably would have told you that 2 out of every 5 people arrested after participating in last summer's Farage riots had been previously reported to the police for domestic abuse. So that's 41% of 899 people arrested for taking part in the violent disorder last July and August had been reported for crimes associated with intimate partner violence. One police force, the arrest figures were as high as 68%, which means 68% of the men arrested for violence during the Farage riots in one police force area had previously been reported for crimes associated with intimate partner violence, for crimes that get filed under domestic abuse. I'll say that again. One police force last summer, of all the men it arrested for violence in the riots, 68% of them had previously been reported for domestic abuse. And that is the, what's the word I'm looking for? That is the context in which journalists, politicians are using words like tinderbox, using language that comes perilously close to sounding supportive, ignoring, for example, the statistics that I've just shared with you, focusing instead upon kind of tropes and memes. Listen, if one person is accused of one crime, then all we can ask is that the authorities look into it and act as quickly as is possible. The idea that we take it upon ourselves to collectively punish or to collectively pursue loads and loads of people who have nothing to do with that alleged crime is, I mean, it is absurd, right? And yet that is very much where the traffic seems to be taking us at the moment. And it plays into something, this, that I've been thinking about, as you know, for a long time. I don't know why it dropped off my radar, probably because there's so much else going on. The diet that gets served up on Twitter in particular, but I suspect also on Facebook, depending on how you how your algorithms have evolved. But the idea that we are living in a country that is somehow unbearable, that we are living in a country where nobody is safe and nothing good ever happens, is taking hold among people who've got no evidence whatsoever to base it upon. I told you the first time I stumbled across those accounts that are dedicated to publishing footage of violence and crime being undertaken by people of colour. It doesn't actually matter where, but this narrative of invasion, which is, you know, reminiscent, of course, of the language of 1930s Germany and indeed 1930s Daily Mail. They were very quick to talk about an invasion of German Jews, actually, specifically. You look at this language, you hear the echoes of history, you register some surprise at the people going along with it, some of the people cheering it on, and no surprise at all at people like Farage warning about societal collapse, or the Daily Telegraph employing a phalanx of what can only really be described as apocalypse correspondence. But then the government joins in, talks about society fraying at the edges, talks about the North, Lisa Nandy, having worries that the North might go up in flames, without stopping to wonder whether it's true. Would you like to hear some statistics? 72% of us, by which I mean British people, thought that the sentences for those convicted of rioting last year were either fair or not harsh enough. I'm going to tell you that again. 72% of people thought the sentences for those convicted of rioting last summer were either fair or not harsh enough. Less pertinently, but I still think interestingly, the riots in 2011, which right-wing journalists currently poised to support the 2025 rioters, responded to by calling for the army to be brought in and people to be locked up forever for the crime of stealing a bottle of water. The riots in 2011, which I also condemned, if it matters, led to 3.5 times as many arrests as the riots undertaken last year. What percentage of people do you think said that those of us who cleaned up after last summer's riots represented the real Britain as opposed to the rioters? I don't know how much attention you pay to polls, but rarely do you see a figure as high as 87%. You can send an entire country to hell in a handcart on a 52% win. 87% of Brits said that the people who cleaned up after the riots represented the real Britain. And yet you turn on your television this morning, turn on your radio, open up your newspaper, and you could be forgiven for thinking that it's the other way round. That 87% of the country think that the violent rioters with a disproportionate record of domestic abuse somehow represent the real Britain. Funny, isn't it? Or not? Perhaps you have a better grasp than I do on how it happens, why it happens. So we are not on the verge of civil war in this country. The people turning up at one protest this weekend were outnumbered by anti-racist protesters, who don't always do their cause any favour, of course, by deploying some of the tactics they deploy. But we can't warn about generalising and then start generalising again ourselves. The reality is so completely at odds with what is being portrayed. It seems like a slightly pathetic analogy, doesn't it, Brexit? But I'm just looking for times in our shared memory, in our collective memory, where people who are supposed to be both informing and helping the public are giving the public polar opposite perceptions of what the reality is on the ground. I have, again, for the record, if I'm going to ask you what your opinions are, I'm going to share mine. I have no beef whatsoever with people who are frightened. I don't want to go back to contempt for the con men, compassion for the conned. But the question of whether or not you should be frightened or how frightened you should be seems to me to be completely missing from this coverage. So at the hotel in Epping, one man has been arrested and charged, which means we can't talk about it anymore, for alleged crimes against a girl. And that would frighten me if I lived in that area. But what would you be more frightened by? A rampaging mob of men, 68% of whom are likely to have been questioned for domestic abuse offences, reported even for domestic abuse offences, or a bunch of people who have not been accused of or reported for anything? It's just odd. I don't feel any different when you tell me what the ethnicity of an offender is, or an alleged offender. It doesn't change the way I feel about things. It's the offence and the victim that I think of, not the... And listen, I know that even this isn't self-evident or obvious anymore. I know that even this isn't self-evident or obvious. How many... I don't know, we'd have to check precisely how many violent and sexual offences had been reported in Epping and Ongar in the 12 months up to May this year. I think we can probably find that figure. And then you'd have to ask yourself, why would this one be getting the reaction that it's getting. And again, it's not to criticise the people with that reaction. But those numbers, I'll tell you again, because you can talk about your far-left echo chambers or whatever it may be until you're blue in the face. 72% of people thought the sentences for those convicted of rioting last year were either fair or not harsh enough. What percentage of right-wing commentators in this country do you think are reflecting the views of the 72%? What percentage of right-wing commentators in this country, the people that brought you Brexit, that brought you Boris Johnson, that brought you Liz Truss, that brought you austerity, are reflecting the true feelings of the 87% of British people who believe that their compatriots who cleared up after the riots represent the real Britain, and that the people who undertook the riots are not representing the real Britain at all? I don't know what to do, to be completely honest with you. I don't know how you conduct these conversations anymore. I don't know how you have a conversation that just takes it as read that a crime doesn't become better or worse according to the ethnicity or the identity of the person that is accused of committing it. It seems to me to be so completely at odds with normality that we don't currently have the tools to address it. What do you do to someone who insists that they are living in a state of mortal peril when all of the evidence is that the people they're lining up alongside outside a hotel pose a much greater harm to coin a phrase, to our women and children than the people in the hotel do? But again, I feel the need to keep stressing that if crime is committed or if allegations are made, then the full force of the law must be deployed. And it's not confined, of course, to... Well, I mean, can I do a phone-in on that? We do a phone-in on whether or not I'm the only one who thinks that some people are actually praying for these riots? Might be a bit tricky legally. But it's pretty obvious, right? When you see some of the coverage, see some of the nibbling at the edges of outright incitement. And actually, you see the people defending those who have actually been done for outright incitement. And can you be a supporter of someone convicted of incitement while not actually being complicit in incitement yourself? I don't know. 16 minutes after 10 is the time. So, I think the question that I'm minded to ask is about the gulf between the lives that we're leading and the picture of our country that is being portrayed. There was another one. There's a councillor in Westminster from Reform who gave an interview. I told you about this last week. Gave an interview to Sky News in which she was making all sorts of claims about safety. And the massive majority, if not all Londoners, simply don't recognise these pictures being painted on social media often by bloody Russians or by people who've never been anywhere near the capital in decades, or people who live in a pursuit of money now that Elon Musk will send your way if you muster up enough clicks by provoking fear and anger among people who are not in the eye of the storms that they describe. How do you deal with that? That's the question, isn't it? 0345 6060973. Is the number that you need. When almost the entire media and political class, not phrases I use very often, but when the entire media and political class is portraying the United Kingdom as being on the brink of catastrophe, the phrase tinderbox appearing in columns in once respectable newspapers, how do we hold on to the truth? 0345 6060973. How do we hold on to the truth? Because I can't remember it being this bad. I can't remember opening the Mail or the Telegraph and reading article after article after article designed. And it's because Labour are in power. That's another point that has to be remembered. They couldn't go full in on this. They couldn't go all in on this incredibly damaging denigration of our country when the people that they put in power were in power. But it's only because Labour are in power that they now feel free to go absolutely unhinged on how awful everything is and how things are about to blow up And of course, I don't know where the line is between, quotes, warning, end quotes, that things are about to blow up and wishing that things are about to blow up. I don't know where it is, but I've got a horrible feeling that we've crossed it. I've got a horrible feeling that the media and much of Westminster is infected with people who want riots, because it would prove some unarticulated point about immigration in general or race or ethnicity. I think they want riots now. I really do. And I don't know how you battle that. I don't know how you resist it. I don't know how you deal with it. I don't know how you hold on to the truth. 0345 6060 973. What do you think? What do you think of that analysis in the first instance? I think there are two countries now. I think there's one that is terminally online and one that isn't. Well, or there's three, because if you're buying newspapers and still looking at traditional media, you're getting now what happens when the tail wags the dog. So they've seen the kind of numbers that social media can muster with this diet of race hate, and they've kind of gone backwards. British newspapers and British commentary has gone backwards into a place that it was, for example, in the 1970s or the 1980s. And they are filling their boots with the kind of rhetoric and the kind of language that would once have been considered reprehensible. And, of course, it's still considered reprehensible by many of us. But, you know, talking of invasion, talking of threat, danger, without mentioning how many of the men in last summer's riots had actually been reported for actual allegations of domestic abuse. It's just bonkers, right? So how do we, working on the possibly naive presumption that you, like me, don't think that a crime becomes better or worse according to the ethnicity or the status of the perpetrator, how do we deal with this? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. So perhaps a small side order of whether or not my fears are justified, whether or not you see what I see. And then a crucial question of how do you resist attempts to portray your own country as absolutely terrible when you know that that's not the truth? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
LBC.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Ooh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that?
Yes, I have both Captain Nats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Will they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers. Where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one. Where every little thing you do makes a big difference. Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
23 minutes after 10 is the time. And listen, you're very kind to me. And you indulge me, and some days I do come on air with genuine perturbation is an odd word. Fear is perhaps a slightly too strong a word. But I'm beginning to really worry about what I'm seeing and hearing, about, especially when I remind myself of what the real statistics are, what the real figures are. I remind myself of what happened in 2011, when people who are now essentially stoking violent riots were calling for violent rioters to be locked up forever. For what a difference 14 years makes. But what a difference a year makes as well. You'd have thought, wouldn't you? The clue was Lucy Connolly. The clue was when people in prominent positions started queuing up to defend somebody who pleaded guilty to incitement. And you sort of thought, well, what does that say about your attitude to incitement? I wonder if we're finding out. But the question I've got is, what the hell can we do about it? Naz is in Enfield. Naz, what do you think?
I was just telling your producer that I was born in London, and I've never left that, the place I was born in. And I just find it very frightening that Suella Braverman showed her face again and was saying how peaceful the Epping protests were, in complete contradiction with Essex police.
Well, we've seen pictures of police officers under attack. And when did she say that?
Yeah. She said that on Friday or Saturday, and I thought, oh, she's getting involved again.
Right.
But
I didn't hear that, obviously. So.
But there was an interview with her,
okay.
and she was, of course, like, you know, praising the right to protest and.
Okay. Well, we can't leave her out of it entirely. But I'm more interested in where you are at the moment, and I don't mean Enfield. I mean emotionally or intellectually. The gulf. Let's talk about the gulf between 72% of people who thought the sentences for those convicted last summer were either fair or not harsh enough, and the media narrative that I'm absorbing this morning, which suggests pretty much the polar opposite.
Yes, so I'm very emotional about it because I got affected a lot from after 9/11, 7/7, all these things where Muslims are sort of like, you know, targeted. So I've been targeted a lot, and so I sometimes just want to stay home. I just find it so that people are ready to believe this rhetoric. And I would say, go and talk to, you know, if you've got Muslims next door or if you've got neighbours, just talk to them. We're human beings like you are, and we want the law, and we want, if people have done the crime, of course. But stoking up the hatred is quite
frightening. But it is that. I mean, it's pretty simple when you put it like that. Stoking up hatred against people who haven't done anything wrong.
Yes.
There's not. I mean, how do you get off that particular hook? I was reading, I forget which newspaper it was in, but sometimes you even catch yourself becoming normalised or inured to this. But it was about people driving past one of these protests and some people were tooting their horn to express support. And another woman wearing a headscarf drove past and people started shouting at her to go back to where she effing came from. And her offence is to be driving a car around Essex on a Sunday afternoon.
But that's what I'm saying, you see. I've had people saying, because I wear hijab, that's just the scarf.
Yes, I know.
And I've had people say before, go back to your effing country. And I thought, well, this is my country, but you haven't got time. And I've been verbally abused and physically abused on the bus.
I'm
just
sorry.
In London. Yes, just because someone has an opinion, a woman just sort of starts saying to me, oh, I know about you lot, you take benefits. And I was working at the time, and I said, no, I'm working, actually. And she said, yeah, but you send money back home. I said, my parents are here, and they passed away. And she just attacked me. This is London, Tottenham. And this is London, and people have got to think they've got the right to just abuse you. And an East European man, he sort of punched me in the back when I was on the bus from Wood Green to Bounds Green, just because he says he doesn't like these people, and you know, things like that. It's spreading more and more hatred, and you feel, you know, when you're doing the right thing. I mean, my kids are all grown up with their jobs, and you feel that you're constantly being like demonized. If you're not taking benefits, you're demonized for this, or demonized for violence, or demonized because the men in a certain group are portrayed as abusers, and you know, all these things. And I think it gets a bit much. You get really so mentally.
I can hear it in your voice. Why do you think they do it?
They do it because they know they can win. I mean, now, the rhetoric with reform and everything, and Donald Trump, they think, well, before they wouldn't say it to your face, but now they don't care. They would just say it to you.
I mean, that's the definition of both normalising and othering, isn't it? And you're quite right about Suella Braverman. And now that I've refreshed my memory, I remember it was here. It was on Nick's show that she accepted an invitation to talk about anti-migrant protests while apparently being completely unaware that there had been 6 arrests and footage of violent clashes. So I don't know how you do that. How do you say, yes, I'll come on and talk about that, while also knowing that either you're completely ignorant of what's happened, but have very strong opinions about it, or you're going to have to pretend not to know that stuff has happened in order to support the very strong opinions that you have. It's part of the problem. Why do they do it? Why do these people insist that the reality is so much worse than the evidence allows? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Naz, take care. I think everybody listening can hear in your voice that you are suffering on a personal level. And, of course, there may be people listening to this programme who will celebrate your suffering for reasons that they are currently feeling a lot more able to articulate than they would have been a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. How do we stand against these tidal waves of hatred and dishonesty? 0345 6060 973. Thomas Watts is here with your headlines.
The Lionesses will head to Downing Street later after lifting the European Championship trophy for a second time running. England beat Spain 3-1 on penalties last night, with Chloe Kelly scoring the deciding spot kick in Basel. President Trump will meet the Prime Minister at his Turnberry Golf Resort in South Ayrshire later. The situation in Gaza is expected to be high on the agenda. And an investigation by LBC has uncovered at least 50 major pornography websites still accessible without age checks. That's despite landmark online safety rules requiring them to have highly effective measures to protect under-18s. LBC weather, dry and bright with sunny spells for most places, a high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
When it comes to saving water in your area, it's the little things that make a real difference. Like turning off the tap while you're brushing your teeth, taking shorter showers, and only filling the kettle with the water you need. On sunny days like today, we'll use more water than usual, so it's vital that we try to save it. Make every drop count to help save water, and you could save energy too. Search Thames Water Calculator to see what you could save.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like a rainy day fund for peace of mind. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Oh, bad traffic. Great news, isn't it? More time in the car. Joy. Maybe you don't feel it. Maybe you don't drive a Lexus NX yet. But when you do, you'll see the positive of peak hour. The delight in a detour. The love of the long way. The Lexus NX plug-in hybrid. Experience amazing before you arrive.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:33 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm getting into Substacks, don't laugh, but it's so hard to find proper journalism in this country at the moment that the people who've taken it upon themselves to sort of self-publish have become increasingly attractive to me. One of my favourites is called Comment is Freed, where Sam Friedman, who is a fellow the Institute of Government, and his dad, who I think is at King's College, write about ideas and reactions to events. And Sam has written an article this weekend under the title Britain Isn't Broken. And I know what you're thinking. How can a bloke who wrote a book called How They Broke Britain possibly chime with an article called Britain Isn't Broken? Well, Sam Friedman wrote a book called Failed State. So if I'm a hypocrite, then so is he, because this is a brilliant article, Britain Isn't Broken. And it points out some of the statistics that I've already shared with you, and also some of the reason why this perception of our country, these desperate attempts to portray our country in incredibly negative lights, are largely dishonest. He picks up on Farage's speech about societal collapse last week when he talked about crime being 50% higher than the 1990s. Sam Friedman writes, according to the National Crime Survey, it's around 75% lower than the peak in the mid-90s. Violence, burglary and car crime are down around 90% due to better home and car security, more CCTV, the falling value of household goods like TVs and laptops. And on it goes. An awful lot of what we are being told is not true, but we believe it. When asked whether crime had gone up in the past year, 61% of people told Ipsos last year that they thought that it had. But when asked if it had gone up in their local area, that number fell to 36%. They saw stuff on the news and thought that it reflected a broader truth. And I haven't yet got the official figures for violence and sexual offences reported in the Epping and Ongar area in the last 12 months, but I'm willing to wager that the massive majority of those allegations and even those arrests did not prompt any public disorder of the kind that some of the people we are looking at today, of the kind that some of these people seem to welcome, aren't we? Well, I think we are. Tell me I'm wrong, please, on 0345 60 60 973. So how do you stand against it, as it were? How do you resist it? Phil's in Oxford. Phil, what would you like to say?
James, hi, good morning. Hope we got a better quality call line than last week when I tried to speak to you. I just want to reference back to when Farage was interviewed with his disproportionate airtime by Nick Ferrari, your dear colleague. And Nick asked the question, do you think there's going to be rioting this summer? To which Farage didn't say, well, that would be awful and how disgraceful, let's hope not. He'd all he said was...
Which James cleverly did last week. I remember thinking, crikey, yeah. Imagine being impressed by a right-wing politician actually saying, of course, rioting is wrong. It's a bit like saying apple pie is nice. It would once have been the least inflammatory, provocative or controversial thing a politician could say. No, rioting is bad. But I didn't hear the interview you were referring to. Farage, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to learn, did not urge people not to riot.
No, he didn't. He just said, nothing would surprise me. The country's in a terrible state. So this, for me, is a political tactic by the right-wing, ever more right-wing press in this country. Our proud traditions of independent journalism are disappearing, it seems. Have disappeared. It's a tactic to try and persuade what we might once have called the One Nation Tory, the slightly right of centre, the decent people, I would describe them as, even though I've never voted Tory, but this shift to the right. And it's actually okay to shift to the right, guys, because we're telling you this country's in an awful state and we're in danger. And so please vote harder right than you would normally do. That's going to get this horrible Labour Party out. And before we know it, we've got I can't say the Conservatives, but we've got reform-like government.
I find it fascinating, because obviously I work in the media, and you've got no way of knowing whether people who you might have worked with 10 years ago or 20 years ago were always secretly harbouring these sort of views, or whether it's just a career decision, you know, whether or not it is something that they've realised is likely to deliver more job opportunities or wages than just sticking to what you describe as the One Nation tourism with which they used to define themselves, or whether they've genuinely changed and now they do spend their whole life terrified of these largely unspecified threats, or they really do believe that the lines that give the lie to the 72% of people thought that the sentences last summer were either fair or not harsh enough, or whether it's actually even simpler than that, and it's just about, oh, well, look, that's doing some great business. I think I'll have a bit of that.
Yeah, so I can get a nice bonus and a pay rise.
I can get nice figures, you know, nice numbers on my social media activity. And the newspapers look at that and think, well, this is going great guns on our website. Let's go in even harder on this stuff. Let's do even more than that.
Sure, quite possibly. I mean, we're in moral panic territory.
Moral panic, as I like to call it, at the moment. Stochastic terrorism, as well, is another one of those phrases.
Yeah, yeah. I've just thought of the phrase immoral panic. I mean, what is more immoral about what they're trying to do? My heart bled for that woman from Tottenham who's
in Enfield, yes.
Absolutely. And I think an antidote is to try and publish experiences and the stories like that. To be walking along to be punched in the back by some guy who says he doesn't like people what she like represents her. People like her, to be verbally abused. You know, this is the stuff that we need to be putting out there, because this is the consequence of for even worse behaviour. And there's a tiny minority of British people who will go out rioting. And they've always been there, and I think they always will be there, very sadly.
And they are considerably more likely to have been reported for domestic abuse than the rest of the population is, including the people that they are, quotes, protesting, end quotes. Again, thank you, Phil. 10:40 is the time. I said I'd look that phrase up, because you don't want to misuse it. Stochastic terrorism refers to the public use of mass media to incite random acts of violence by individuals who are susceptible to such rhetoric. And it affords the instigator plausible deniability due to the indirect or coded nature of their language. Okay, look me in the eye and tell me you don't think that you've witnessed some stochastic terrorism in the last few weeks or the last few days. Stochastic terrorism refers to the public use of mass media to incite random acts of violence by individuals susceptible to such rhetoric. And here's the crucial bit, where the instigator has plausible deniability due to the indirect or coded nature of their language. I don't know, off the top of my head, perhaps you would say something like, I'm just asking questions. Or, as Phil points out, a politician who doesn't avail themselves of the opportunity to condemn rioting, as James Cleverly had absolutely no problem doing last week, but other politicians and commentators apparently do. I've got those statistics for you. I've got the statistics of violent and sexual offences in Epping and Ongar covering the 12 months up to May of this year. And I'll share them with you shortly and leave you to speculate on how many of those reports prompted public protest. Or indeed comments from the likes of Suella Braverman and Nigel Farage. I wonder if you want to have a guess at what the number is. Before that, Gary is in witness. Gary, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, Gary.
Obviously, I live in Widnes, which is the adjacent town to Runcorn and Helsby.
Yes.
We're separated, obviously, just by the River Mersey. And the bridge that separates us looks rather like the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Are you working for the tourist board, Gary? I imagine that's a tough gig.
Because I don't think you're very familiar with that part of
I don't know Widnes. I know the rugby league team, but I don't know Widnes very well. But carry on.
We're separated from Runcorn and Helsby.
And Runcorn and Helsby is one of the blessed constituencies in this country represented by a Reform MP, which is why I think you mentioned it. Yeah, okay.
This is Sarah Poaching, another charmer. Last week she did a piece. I don't know if it was on her YouTube. Anyway, whatever it was. It was from a road, rather nice road in Runcorn, Greenway Road. I'm not repeating the name. It's already out there. It's been on the news. And she said there was a house full of asylum seekers who were causing absolute mayhem. There was violence. There was rubbish strewn around. There was a late night noise. It was. She described it. It was terrible.
Violence, antisocial behaviour, rubbish strewn around the streets, and potential domestic abuse. I'm across this story, but I'll let you tell it.
Yeah. So, well done to BBC Northwest. The following day, did a piece from there. The reporter was stood in Greenway Road, and she checked with the local police. There'd been no reports of antisocial behaviour. There was no rubbish. And then they did a few interviews with the residents of Greenway Road. Lovely people. I've lived here for 30 years. Never seen anything. I don't know what they're talking about. And then he went door to door. The police went door to door in Greenway Road, spoke to the residents door to door. Nothing's happened. We didn't even know we had an asylum residence. Oh, goodness me. Now,
no penalty, no punishment.
It must have been. She must have been telling a fib. What could have possibly been the motive for it?
Beats me, mate.
I've
got a statement here from Cheshire Police. Yeah. The issues referenced in the video do not correlate with the incidents that have been reported to Cheshire Police. And the warden of a local church, so that's nice, Christian values, wrote an open letter to her saying, all I wanted was to have a debate, to say, you know, come on, tell us why you're using this area politically when this isn't about politics. It's about truth. But as you say, we are left to speculate, aren't we? And let's just go back to that definition of stochastic terrorism again. When you use mass media to incite random acts of violence by individuals who are susceptible to such rhetoric, I suppose we should be grateful that the residents of Greenway Road were not susceptible to that rhetoric, Gary.
I know, but, you know, they must have been at some time in the past, because you know what her majority was when she got in? Six.
Well, will it go up or will it go down? Gary, take care. Thank you for that. That figure for violent and sexual offences in Epping and Ongar stands at moment, this is reported in the 12 months up to May of this year, stands at 1,311. 1,311 violent and sexual offences reported in the 12 months up to May this year. But there were no protests until one of them, one of the accused, turned out to be living in a refugee hotel. Make of that what you will. But how do you stand up to this? You've got sitting MPs just making stuff up. You've got statistics being completely ignored. You've got politicians coming perilously close to encouraging and inciting the violence. And they are, I'm afraid, being cheered on by many, many, many members of the media. What do you do about it? How can you stand up to it? I don't know. And listen, the bit I don't really want to tell you is that part of me just feels a little bit too tired even to try now, after the last few years of pointing all this stuff out and being proved right and then not changing anything. What's the point? 03456060973 is the number you need.
Coming up this week on Tom Swarbrick.
After days of protests in Epping, pressure grows on the government to close down asylum hotels. I'll speak to the Reform UK leader of Kent County Council. And Foreign Affairs expert Tim Marshall joins me to take your calls.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Kate's just off to work after sleeping in the best bed in the business. And my word, doesn't she look ready for anything? Something about her smile is just brighter. Her eyes seem glintier. And she just feels so much more Katie-er. Of course, it's no surprise, really, because last night she slept at Premier Inn and she got up to 15% off with Business Booker. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. T's and C's apply.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade. with snacks, stories, and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:49 is the time. Gareth Metcalf, 44, described by a judge as at the forefront of the disorder in Southport last summer, had previous convictions including sexual assault and breach of a non-molestation order. In Hull, where 47 of the 151 people arrested had been reported for prior domestic abuse, Ethan Armstrong, 26, who was jailed for violent disorder, had previously been convicted for causing actual bodily harm after repeatedly punching an ex-girlfriend. Nigel Farage brought an MP into the House of Commons last year who had been locked up for repeatedly punching an ex-girlfriend. So perhaps we shouldn't be that surprised about the crossover in these cases. But how do you protest against these men? You know, if you were really, really cross, as you should be, about these kind of crimes, but perhaps a little bit less predictably, you were keen to protest against them somehow, even though they had been arrested, and in these cases, all of these people were and jailed. And you wanted to protest against it, kicking, I think, wasn't it, rather than punching in the case of the Reform MP. How would you do it? Where would you go if you wanted to register? Because would you just go after everybody called Gary? Or Gareth, or Ethan, or would you go after everybody who looked a bit like them? Or would you find out what kind of building they lived in and then find a building a bit like that near where you live and go and have a protest outside there? Or would you protest outside the building they were in and terrorise all the other people in that building who have absolutely nothing to do with the alleged crimes? Do you see what I mean? How do you do that? Or are we now perilously close to the moment where people will stand up and say, I don't care whether they're good or bad, I just don't want them here? I think, have we passed that point? I don't care what they're fleeing, I don't care what they're doing, I don't care who they are, I just don't want them here. And by the way, the reason why I won't stop talking about crime and lying about it in the case of these people is because I'm very, very conscious of the way in which the linking of criminality with immigration adds to the racist fires that broke out last summer up and down the country. And it's not even true, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I don't know what the phone-in is. I mean, this one's important, and I'm enjoying isn't quite the right word. But about the terminally online, about the... Because I've got a horrible feeling that some sort of household name politicians and commentators are basing their entire worldview now upon the absolute sewer pipe that Elon Musk has turned Twitter into. That they genuinely seem to think... There's no other explanation for it. They genuinely seem to think that that reflects reality more than their own lived experience does. You know? London is a magnificent city. I mean, you really can't exaggerate how amazing London is. It's imperfect. There is crime. There is violent crime. I've been burgled. I know people who've been mugged. One of them quite recently. It happens. But to see a London councillor on a television programme the other day explaining that she'd just come back from Chicago and New York and everybody thought we had a particular problem with crime. And you just sit there and go, your job surely is to tell them to give their bloody heads a wobble and to stick their head out of the window and have a look around instead of believing what's popping up on their social media feed. So we're gonna try. I don't know what the phone-in would be, do you? And how do you find out what's going on in a world you don't inhabit? And how dangerous is it to have a quick look? What if you get sucked into it? What if I go and have a look to work out how dreadful everything is for the terminally online, and then I come on air tomorrow and I've got a kind of completely different view of things? I don't know. 10:53 is the time. Julie's in Sheffield. Julie, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. I'm glad you're doing this topic today. Thanks. I'm glad and sad, really.
Yes.
Because it's about how you resist. And I never thought I'd be in a position where I would be having to have a big argument with one of my neighbours about untruths and, you know, it's easy to say left-wing, right-wing, but,
yes,
you know, I've just come to the conclusion that I'm now in the minority and I don't like to be. And the thing that tipped me with my neighbours, you know, we're all in our 70s, we're in a bit of a middle-class class Sheffield suburbia or retired. And so he has got no experience of an area being taken over or whatever, but he reads about it and absorbs it, and it's his total topic of conversation. So I did have a real big argument about it with him a week or two ago, and in part of the argument he said that a local hotel, which is about a mile down the road from us, has closed, which it has, and it's going to be an asylum. And I said, it's not. And he said, well, it is. And I said, well, okay, well, I'll just ring the council. Anyway, the council actually, Sheffield Council did put something on our website, on the council website on Friday, Saturday, to say that it's not true, it's just a rumour, and that they have actually contacted the Home Office.
It's worse than a rumour, isn't it? It's a very deliberate attempt to cause an act of random violence at that place. I'm sure your neighbour wouldn't actually get involved in the random violence, but
no, he can hardly dare. No, he wouldn't. But
let's not get personal.
No, I mean he couldn't walk down there. But,
yeah.
You know, that's not the point, is it? It's the fact that hotel could have been attacked, and I mean, I just thank God the people in that area. Oh, it's not a really, you know, well-off area. Could have done that. And but I'm fed up, James, of having to say to people, this isn't right. And the minority, I feel that I'm in at the moment, is fortunately my husband, thank the Lord, me and my husband, and you and Nick Abbott. I feel like I'm in a group of four.
Well, yeah, but we're the ones talking about it.
And I
grant you, the voices on the other side sometimes seem a little bit louder, and some of them may believe the bills that they're spouting, and some of them might just be doing it for reasons of perceived advancement.
Why?
But I don't think that
broken.
That's the minority.
You know, the country isn't broken. There's a lot
not.
Of beauty. And I think, thank God for the Lionesses this weekend, because if they hadn't have won, then Monday morning would have been, you know, another downer.
We were talking about the Lionesses last week for the reasons that are closer to what we're talking about now, and some of the racist abuse that one of them was subject to, and nothing done, of course, on social media platforms to take that sort of stuff down, and Farage celebrating when they decided to stop taking the knee, because
there's never a comeback, James. And actually, there's nothing I've seen now in our neighbourhood to say, oh, that's not true, it's not true. But there were plenty to say it was.
It's incredible.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's that, I don't know
That's what today's phoning is, and I wish I'd never asked the question, Julie, but I'll take what you said, the sad and glad, as a reason for doing it. But, you know, we can sit here listing all of the effort, for want of a better word, that is put into promoting and amplifying the kinds of characters whipping up this kind of hatred. We can invite them to write newspaper columns, invite them onto television and radio shows, and yet the people who are saying, I think we should all calm down, focus on facts, and stop judging the severity of a crime according to the identity, status or ethnicity of the culprit or the person accused of doing it. I don't know where you get heard. You will always be able to get heard here, but beyond these four walls, I'm not sure, to be honest with you. And can I tell you something that I'm going to bet you don't know?
Oh, yes, please.
So I did a double take on these. Again, it's in this splendid Substack post by Sam Friedman. The numbers are actually coming down. Even though people are still crossing the channel, the numbers of asylum seekers in hotels, and I understand why people get cross about that, no matter that the portrayal of what conditions in these hotels are like is entirely wrong, the sense that someone's in a hotel where I used to go for a carvery on a Sunday afternoon, or where my auntie Doris got married, and now it's full of these people and I'm paying for it. You don't need to be a massive racist to feel twinges of upset about that, but the numbers are actually coming down. 54,062 in 400 hotels in September of 2023. In March of this year, it's down to 32,245 in 218 hotels. So if you're really, really cross about it, you should be less cross now, considerably less cross now, almost half as cross now as you were in 2023. But
not if the Labour government are in.
Well, that is it, isn't it? That is the question of what people in my profession, what people in the UK media do. and how much of that is informed by not wanting to cause trouble for the various incompetence and moral delinquents that they helped install in Downing Street, and wanting to cause trouble for an imperfect but obviously honest politician like Keir Starmer. And I don't know why. I don't think I ever will. If I haven't worked it out by now, I'm never going to work it out. Why would anybody come even within a mile of sounding as if they are encouraging or hoping for riots? And worse, why would you give free ride to politicians who sail ever closer to the rock that says, I support the people rioting, as opposed to the mealy-mouthed excuses that they're currently coming out with?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Keir Starmer has arrived in Ayrshire to hold talks with President Trump at his golf resort. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is expected to feature prominently in their wide-ranging discussions. LBC's Gina Davidson is at Turnberry.
He will have a very fine diplomatic line to walk when he discusses the situation in Gaza, when he discusses getting Israel and Hamas back around the negotiating table, and yes, that humanitarian aid. But President Trump already saying that he doesn't believe that that is an issue just for the US to solve.
The Lionesses are due to return to England with their second successive European Championship trophy. They beat world champion Spain 3-1 on penalties in Basel last night. The decisive spot kick was scored by Chloe Kelly, who says it's been a rollercoaster year.
There were a lot of tears at full time, especially when I saw my family, because those are the people that got me through those dark moments. Tough times don't last, and just around the corner was a Champions League final, won that, and now a Euros final, won that. So thank you to everyone that wrote me off. I'm grateful.
There will be a Downing Street reception later, followed by an open-top bus parade in London tomorrow. The online regulator Ofcom has told LBC it's actively assessing adult websites' compliance with age checks. They're now required to use highly effective methods like ID verification to stop children from accessing pornography. But an LBC investigation has found dozens of sites ignoring the rules. The Royal College of Nursing is expected to overwhelmingly reject a proposed pay rise of 3.6%. The ballot result, due to be confirmed later in the week, raises the prospect of industrial action by nurses in England. Resident doctors in England are midway through their five-day strike in a row over pay. A report warned nearly 50,000 businesses in Britain are on the brink of collapse. The accountancy firm Begbies Traynor found retailers and hospitality firms are among the hardest hit by higher wage bills and tax rises. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.30. That is up 10. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry and bright with sunny spells for most areas. A few showers this afternoon. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A strange one next. Well, not strange, but I mean, some days, particularly on Mondays, I don't know whether it's because of the refreshing nature of weekends, but I do sometimes see links between stories when we talk about them together that may not be immediately discernible. So I'm looking at wildfires right across the Mediterranean. And I'm looking at terrified residents fleeing from a towering wall of flames on a road in Turkey. I'm looking at a bloke on a roof in Greece. And I'm looking at some of the hills around Athens. I can't tell which angle this is taken from, but they are razed to the ground by the fires. And I'm thinking about terrorism Or I'm thinking about the process of being terrorised. Looking back to the last hour and focusing on that phrase that I really think we should all go on a crash course in, on that notion of stochastic terrorism, where the intention is very cleverly to incite violence in specific places, but without ever being actually fully on the hook for it yourself by making indirect or coded comments, using indirect or coded language to provoke, to incite acts of violence. And why we are susceptible to some provocations and not to others. It's a fascinating human question. I'm not doing a phone-in on it. Goodness sake, I mean, it'd be Plato's Symposium. I wouldn't be qualified to contribute. But isn't it weird the way in which we can present a population with a literal apocalypse, you know, with actual fires, and we can encourage the population to go, yeah, whatever. I don't believe it personally. I think it's all a big hoax. And then we can portray something that is, I mean, enormously exaggerated or not even true at all, and mobilise not that many people. Again, I should have made this point in the last hour. Mobilise quite a few people to protest violently in some cases, and report upon that as if it is representative of entire populations, of entire countries. I mean, it is extraordinary. But I am interested in it, and I don't know that we've ever found quite the Rosetta Stone. What's it called? The key, the skeleton key to unlock this topic. And that, of course, is the point. The failure is the point on this topic, because I believe, and I need to add that I was wrong about vegetarianism, wasn't I? I mean, it may come back round again, but I felt a few years ago that we were on a path to a place where more and more people were going to embrace the idea that eating meat was actually quite a terrible thing to do. And whether or not you were going to arrive immediately at a place where you weren't going to do it anymore, or whether you were just going to quietly and with a side order of cognitive dissonance dial down your meat consumption without ever fully acknowledging that you thought it was evil all along, I thought that those tides were turning. And I don't think they were. I think things have re-reversed, as it were, or reversed. So I could be wrong about this as well, but it seems to me that we all know that we should be a lot more terrorised by climate change. Right? We all know that. And we're not. And the days when I'm most baffled by that, the days when I'm most baffled by the why not, are the days when things are literally catching fire. So you can't go to the Acropolis today if you're in Athens, because between midday and 5 p.m. it will be shut because of the high temperatures and for the safety of employees and visitors. Now, the Acropolis, if you don't know it, it's a bit of a hike. It's quite a walk up the hill to get to, or the mountain to get to the temple at the top. So there is some wisdom in this. I imagine that the museum at the bottom will be open, but please check before setting out later today if you are indeed listening to this in Athens. God, what has the show turned into? A tourist guide to Greece. And I know Greece very well, as you may know. I've mentioned it several times over the years, and the fires are not an entirely new phenomenon, far from it. Every summer there are fires in Greece, but not like this. I was there two or three summers ago, and we were looking at the news and talking to the owner of the place we were staying about whether or not our plan to move onto roads should be abandoned, and whether or not if we didn't move onto roads because the fires were raging there, he would be able to accommodate us in his place, despite it being high season. And he said, well, the people who were cancelling their holidays even to here because they're worried about the fires. And it's mad, isn't it, that we can sit here for 2 hours, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, examining how easy it is to terrorise people about people. And then from 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock, examining how hard it is to terrorise people about actual fires, about flames, about heat. And, of course, the corollary of heat in climate change is floods. So floods and fires, these are biblical-level disasters. How would you have responded, like, 20 years ago, if someone had said to you, we're going to be seeing increasingly biblical news? And we haven't had a plague of locusts yet, have we? Don't at me. too embarrassing if I've missed a plague of locusts. But if someone had said to you, this is looking biblical, you'd have said, nah, don't be daft. We're going to get better as a population. We're going to get more informed. We're going to get wiser. We're going to get less susceptible to provocations and excitements. And then I think somebody might have said, well, along comes the internet. Here comes the internet. You're going to have to deal with that. And that will be part of the problem, but not all of it. Not when it comes to this. British tourists have been warned to stay on high alert as wildfires continue to tear through Mediterranean holiday destinations. 1,700 people in Turkey have fled their homes. Right, pause, stop there. Where are you now? Okay, I want you to imagine you were at home. If you're not at home, imagine you were at home. Okay, put your feet up, put the telly on, watch the highlights of yesterday's football or possibly the rugby, which was also incredibly exciting from Saturday morning. I'm terribly sorry, you're going to have to flee your home. You're going to have to flee your home. What? What can I take with me? Nothing. Well, only what you can carry. And don't get a suitcase because you're going to have to run down the road. You're going to have to flee your home at speed. Probably best to leave the car behind because it might blow up. So you can take what you can carry in a rucksack. Well, there you go. Let's do that for a minute. But what are you going to take? You are fleeing your home because it is highly likely to catch fire. And this is not confined to the world's hotspots. Far from it. It's increasingly happening in the United States, as you know, and in places where we in Britain have been going on holiday for years. So, why doesn't it land harder? I wonder if when my retirement finally comes around, that long distant day when I no longer have the pleasure of your company every morning, will I still be asking this question? Like, but half of the country, I don't know how long I'm gonna live, let alone work. But, you know, imagine half of Norfolk has disappeared under the sea. Half of Norfolk has disappeared under the sea. Half of Greece has gone up in flames. Climate change everywhere is exacting a terrible toll upon humanity, upon the population. And I would still be here on LBC saying to you, why aren't we more? Why aren't we taking this more serious? Why aren't we more? Terrorised is the word I'm going for, because it fits, doesn't it, with the news. Why aren't we more terrorised by terrifying things than we are by unterrifying things? Leave the second bit out of the question. Why aren't we more terrorised by these scenes than we are? And I think perhaps it would be helpful to speak to people, as I try to do, but not always with great success, who are what I would call suitably terrorised. It's a weird one, this, because I am part of the problem. I can intellectually acknowledge that these scenes are biblical, that these problems are enormous, and that this future looks apocalyptic. But I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling what I described to you in the last hour about my fears regarding the direction of traffic and conversation in this country at the moment with regards to immigration and refugees and violence. That I can feel a genuine fear about the direction of traffic there. I've done my history. Is that the problem? I know what these things lead to historically. I know how demonising a population, encouraging people or defending people that want buildings to be set fire to, inciting pogroms. We know where that leads. History teaches us stark and frequent lessons about where that can lead. Maybe there's no precedent for this kind of environmental apocalypse. So we don't have the same buttons being pressed. I don't know. But I do know there's a very real chance that unless something unspecified and at the moment invisible happens, I will still be here in 20 years' time when everything is measurably worse, saying, why aren't we more frightened yet? Why aren't we more frightened yet? 0345 6060 973. Once again, parts of Europe are going up in flames. People are fleeing their homes. This isn't happening in sub-Saharan Africa. This isn't happening in countries that we might historically associate with epic or excess heat. This is happening in the places that we holiday, the places that we dream of retiring to. They are being razed to the ground by fire. People are unable to visit tourist sites or go to work because of heat. It is... And it's a very good point. How can there be no precedent for something that is described as biblical, asks Ellis. That's a very pedantic but also very clever criticism. But you know what I mean. I don't know that we learned any lessons from Noah, did we? Particularly? I don't think we learned any lessons from the seven plagues of Egypt necessarily, but we did learn lessons from the Nazis. We learned what happens when you allow parts of your own population to be maligned and othered in such a hideous way. So why don't we respond more passionately to this? Europe's going up in flames, and we will probably turn the page. I am. I turn the page. I stop, I think, we must talk about that. And it's going to be an embarrassing one, because I'm going to have to admit that I am part of what I'm exploring here. I'm part of the failure to take things seriously enough. And I've got a horrible feeling I always will be, because I've had some extraordinary calls from some extraordinary people over the years who've come perilously close to pushing me into a place where I do more and I feel more. But I'm embarrassed to tell you, I'm still not there, and I don't understand why. They got close in that film. Quite a lot of you are referencing back to that that Leonardo DiCaprio film from a few years ago. They got close to it, but they didn't really get close to explaining it. They just got close to predicting and describing it. So there's a meteor heading towards Earth. It's an allegory for climate change. And at some point in the process, huge swathes of the population just decide to stop looking at it. If you ignore it, it's not there. That's the second question, isn't it? Is that what we're doing? Do you think subconsciously the reason we turn the page is because it's too big to process? It's too big to contemplate. It is catching fire. Our world is catching fire. And we don't care enough. Why don't we care enough? 0345 6060 973 is the number that we need. I want you to answer that from the perspective of being a bit like me, someone who knows that you should care more but doesn't, or from the perspective of someone who does care more but possibly has something helpful and interesting to say about those of us who don't. The figures are apocalyptic. The parallels are biblical. The experiences are catastrophic. And yet, I think, if I were to knit it briefly to the last hour, I would find it a heck of a lot easier to terrorise you with stories about somebody in a hotel in Essex than I would about huge swathes of our continent going up in flames. Why don't we care more? 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
My classroom isn't just a classroom. It's a launchpad, a runway, a place where ideas fly on the back of paper planes. Sure, there are other ways to get students to speak up, but this is mine. All it takes is a bit of creativity, and soon they're all joining in. It gives me a lot of joy to see one of my ideas working in the moment and the class learning something new together. That's when you know a lesson is really taking off.
Every lesson shapes a life. Start shaping yours with a minimum starting salary of £31,000. Search Get Into Teaching.
Oh, bad traffic. Great news, isn't it? More time in the car. Joy. Maybe you don't feel it. Maybe you don't drive a Lexus NX yet. But when you do, you'll see the positive of peak hour. The delight in a detour. The love of the long way. The Lexus NX plug-in hybrid. Experience amazing before you arrive.
It's the one you've been waiting for. The big one. The one sale that can't be missed. Ready? The Crystal Ski Holidays big sale is here. Buy one lift pass, get one free on any ski holiday to Europe before April 2027. But you need to be quick and get your skis on. Sale ends Monday the 4th of August. Get that feeling. Book now at crystalski.co.uk. APTA and ATOL protected.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
18 minutes after 11 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I've got that weird cognitive dissonance going on. I'm looking at photographs of, in the case of Greece, a country I know extremely well and where I will be quite soon, thank goodness. And I'm thinking, why is my tummy calm? You know, when you feel something in your tummy, you feel a fear or a nerves in your tummy, you get the visceral, you get the gut reaction to something. And I can feel it when I look at the direction of discourse regarding asylum seekers in this country. I can feel genuine sort of gut-wrenching angst about what people are doing, what people are saying, how lies are going unchallenged, how lives are increasingly threatened. But I can't for something that is much more real, much more urgent and much more visible. Why? Why? Tony's in Brent. Tony, what do you reckon?
Yes, good morning, James. Yeah. I work in this field of climate change. I'm a planner, but the problem is that even though, you know, people in Greece are experiencing fires, there's lots of people in Greece who are not experiencing fires, and there's lots of people in the world who are not experiencing floods, even though there's floods right across the world. So what it is it's a fragmented experience. So, okay, we've just experienced a very long hot spell. The last couple of years have got hotter and hotter. It's what's called in the business the boiling frog syndrome. That's gradually changing, but they're not changing dramatically enough. And it's only when the water's boiling that the frog notices there's a problem. So it's about the kind of geographical experience of it and sharing.
I can't really argue with you, but of course there are plenty of people who do care sufficiently, if that's the right word to use, who are just as unaffected by it directly as those of us who don't care sufficiently. But I don't know how helpful this will be. You might be the last person that I'd pose this to. But looking back at the last hour of the programme, when we were talking about how easily people are terrorised or terrified, I mean, most of them aren't affected by the stuff that they claim to be worried about. But the stuff that they are worried about, let's not be unkind. So why does it work in some areas and not in others?
It's a good question. I'm not so sure that, you know, the general population is as reform would like us to think it is. It's about retreating to look after your own. So just to make the point that although this climate change is affecting a lot of people in Europe now, it'll be interesting to see what people in Seville think after the
floods. Yeah, well, we had a very similar phone in then, actually, and it would be interesting to know. My phone lines are full at the moment, but if in the event of somebody in Seville being able to tell us about what's changed there, since I suspect nothing, or at least not enough. Sorry, Tony, carry on.
It's political. I mean, I was just going to make connections between your two call-ins this morning. Reform is, of course, calling for a rowing back on net zero. Because they're suggesting it's going to cost more.
It goes hand in hand. I'm going to crack on because your phone line is just moving into the intolerable. Just technologically, quality of contribution, satisfyingly high. But there does seem to be an intersecting Venn diagram on people that are very easily persuaded, or people who are dedicated to persuading others to be terrified of lots of things that are not worthy of that level of emotional response, while being completely relaxed about things that are. I don't know what that means about us, about anyone. 03456060973 is the number you need if you think you do. And I don't know whether this works. What about you? What about is the right phrase Gestalt switch? It's another one I should look up. That Gestalt switch and stochastic terrorism. That's your homework for today. What flicked your switch, so to speak, when you went from being in a place where you knew you should feel more, but actually, to your own embarrassment, perhaps didn't, to being, yes, I do, actually, I do feel the urgency of this. And is it because there's not a great deal you can do that the urgency is so elusive for so many of us? What are you going to? I just mentioned I'm going to Greece. I probably shouldn't be flying, should I? If you're that worried about it, that's what they usually do. That's what the line usually, if you're that worried about it, why are you flying? I said, well, because I honestly don't think if I never fly again that the temperature of the world is going to come down. I don't know, but I'm still asking the question. Thank you, Tony. From Brent to King's Lynn, Kevin is there. Kevin, what do you reckon is going on here?
Morning, Joe. I'm involved in the renewables industry, so I'm surrounded by people who are concerned. The reason
they're also saving a few quid, aren't they? I mean, it's not necessarily driven. Was it Valencia rather than Seville that I meant?
It was Valencia. Yeah, sorry about the most recent one. Yeah, but the Spanish had the power outages, didn't they?
That was right.
So
yes.
There was right. I've just written a little list down here of the things that people are telling me when they come to us as customers. One of the big things at the moment, energy cost savings is all always got to be a primary driver when people do renewables. But you know what? It's the environment.
Slow down a bit.
Right. Energy savings will always be the primary driver.
Yeah,
okay. However, the secondary and third drivers change according to what's going on. So if Greta Thunberg and David Attenborough are all over the news, that's it. If Putin's all over the news or oil wars are all over the news, that's it. But at the moment, it is genuinely environment and civil unrest. People are buying equipment now to keep them running in power cuts because of either political instability or climate instability where they don't trust the grid. That's the feedback we're getting and the drivers we're getting. So I think people are concerned. The biggest problem that we as an industry have got...
But they're concerned enough to protect themselves from it. They're not concerned enough to campaign for changes to it. They're two quite different... I mean, you're describing quite a paranoid mindset there, whereas the people I'm interested in are not paranoid. They're almost the opposite of paranoid, because... Climate change really is coming to get us.
And yet
we're not reacting accordingly.
And it doesn't matter what side of the fence you sit, if you're left wing, right wing, or straight down the middle, it's going to affect every single one of us. So why we have certain political parties taking the stand that they do, I don't know.
But I'm looking at flames burning.
Yep. In Turkey, 50 degrees of heat, 50 degrees centigrade. Humans cannot stand
outside
for more than an hour in
that. We can't feel it? Is that why? I mean, if we were... what about people in Turkey? Are they going to be having a massive wake-up? I suspect they're not, Kevin. I suspect they're going to be displaying precisely the same sort of cognitive dissonance that we are in this country.
But if you go onto the streets, you're pillared as a menace to society.
Hmm?
You look at Just Stop Oil, look at Extinction Rebellion.
Yes.
Everyone says, oh, yeah, we fully support what they're trying to say, but we don't support what they're doing. Well, what else is there to do for these
people? Lock them up. And then
that'll keep them quiet,
let's make up a story about an ambulance, but that, whatever you do, don't mention that if it's the farmers protesting against having to pay tax. Kevin, thank you for that. I like this from Emma. No one wants to change anything about how they live, even down to the way we build our houses or farm our food, to save our lives and the lives of our children. Tiny little changes all over, but everyone just wants to live tomorrow exactly as yesterday. Stubborn and bullheaded. And they point out that ocean warming is the latest pant-wettingly scary figure. Sometimes the answers will be really simple. Really simple. We just don't like being told to change. I'd go a little further. I'm fascinated by this notion of perceived insult. Because I'm just now of an age where I'm beginning to understand how it happens. So if my kids say something to me about something that was not even remotely controversial when I was their age, but is now something that is looked down on, I can't off the top of my head think of any examples. But language would be this. Why political correctness kicked off. When I started this job, I found it ridiculous that people would have a problem with attempts to detoxify public discourse by making some words less acceptable than they had previously been. Because we've always had words that are less acceptable than they've previously been. Swearing is a lot more commonplace than it was when I was young. Political correctness went the other way in some ways, or wokeness, or whatever you want to call it. It's just, here's some advice on being less offensive. But it never felt like advice. It felt like you were being hit over the head with an accusation of being offensive. And if you'd been doing that, or if your mum and dad spoke like that, you'd sort of feel a bit of offence. So it's not just being resistant to change, it's also almost victimised, it's almost feeling victimised. Why are you telling me? Why should I have to do something on this? What's wrong with you? I'm a nice person. I don't know, psychologically, how you knit those two things together, but they must be relevant to the question that I'm asking. Theo is in Kyiv. Theo, what would you like to say?
Hello, Mr. Ryan, how are you doing?
All good, mate. Are you staying safe?
I relatively, yes.
Okay.
A bit of a heavy night last night, but...
As in bombardment, or as in socialising?
As in bombardment,
yes,
unfortunately.
Yes, I thought so. I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, it seems a bit odd to be talking to you about this, but of course it isn't, because even if you're in a war zone, the question of what the world is going to be like when the latest wars are over is intrinsic to the conversation that we're having now, isn't it?
Yeah, and as part of my project, Dictators v. Democrats, I talk about climate change, and I talk about how... to save the planet, we need to save democracy, and vice versa. And it's the same interests who wish to undermine our democracy that wish to undermine our fight to save the planet against climate change. And
that's the Venn diagram we were talking about a moment ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And And those interests are states, such as Russia, but they're also actors at home, you know, incredibly wealthy people in the oil industry, etc., who are buying up houses in, I think it's New Zealand is rated the most likely to survive a serious climate crisis. And they're using disinformation, misinformation across social media. They have an enormous amount of money behind them. And this isn't conspiracy. This is intelligent, well-regarded people like Tim Snyder talking about this. It's a serious concern. They're using the same tactics that we saw in the tobacco industry to make people question whether or not there actually is a problem at all. And you can see Richard Tice, who I share an unfortunate alma mater with, is very much echoing this line. And you see how much money the Reform Party takes from fossil fuel-related interests. You can see why he's doing it. But it's complete short-term thinking.
It goes, I mean, I've had a bit of a crash course on Don Perlman's work in recent weeks because I went to see Kyoto at the... the theatre, and he's the guy who essentially invented the bogus think tank that sounded like it was operating in an area of expertise and was dedicated almost exclusively, well, it was dedicated exclusively to defending the interests of the oil industry and oil-rich states. So, in a way, you're describing the tools, and I'm asking more about the susceptibility. So
well, the tools are extremely effective.
They are, but how do they work? What does it do? Because, listen, if you're going to give me a check, then tomorrow I make a speech pretending that net zero is all a load of rubbish, then there's a logic there that everybody can follow. They might not like it, they might not approve of it, they might hope that if they were made a similar offer, they would have more integrity or more on, but they don't. But, you know, we get... So what is the psychological play here? What are the tools appealing to in us?
It's as one of your earlier callers said, it's a fear of change and it's fear in general. They, you know, come out with arguments saying, net zero will ruin the economy and it will give a boost to China, who doesn't care.
How can I be more frightened of change than I am of wildfires? How can I be more frightened of change than I am of fire?
Exactly. But the message doesn't get through because you're not experiencing. And this is something I see here in Ukraine when I talk to people back home, and they don't quite understand, but it hits very different when the missiles are overhead, and it hits very different when the fire is down the road.
Okay. So we may need to open up the phone lines for Greek and Turkish and Spanish callers, just to establish whether or not when it gets close, when it is just down the road, it does change the way that people feel. Not necessarily behave, because the options might be difficult to pin down, but it changed the way people feel. Theo, thank you, and I mean it. Take care of yourself. We should catch up probably on the reasons why you're in Kyiv sooner rather than later, but in the meantime, do take care. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
Gaza will be high on the agenda at Sir Keir Starmer's talks with Donald Trump in Western Scotland. The two leaders are due to meet at the President's Turnberry Golf Resort in Ayrshire. Events to mark England's historic win at Euro 2025 will begin with a Downing Street reception later. The Lionesses beat Spain 3-1 on penalties last night to lift the European trophy for a second time running. Safety experts have warned some major pornography websites are simply ignoring new age check rules. An LBC investigation has found at least 50 still accessible to children, despite a requirement for highly effective age verification. LBC weather, most places dry and bright with some sunny spells, a few showers spreading this afternoon, a high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door at a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60
973. It is 25 to 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Where it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I sometimes wonder what would happen if we were doing this the other way round. If I was listening to you set up a topic, set up a conversation and thinking either of ringing in or listening to the people that do. But it's self-evident, right, that fires are frightening. Words like fleeing your home should send a chill down our spine. And some of Theo's explanation obviously holds true. All of it holds true, but it doesn't fully answer the question of why we are not more terrified. There's a small debate, by which I mean one message of Rob, suggesting that I shouldn't say terrorised, I should say terrified, because to terrorise requires a deliberate act by a perpetrator, whereas to terrify can be an act of, well, as Rob points out, God, which would be technically a perpetrator. But let's not get bogged down in the ontological question at 11:36 on a Monday morning. I'm interested in the why we don't feel terrified about things that we should feel terrified by. And ultimately, I'm always a bit wary of lazy recalls, lazy throwbacks. But that film was so successful precisely because it so completely addressed this point. Don't look up. The meteor heading towards Earth. It will destroy humanity. God, that's a bit terrifying. I think I'll just ignore it. And of course, the subtext of that film is that this is what we're doing now. There's a meteor heading towards Earth and we are just ignoring it. What? I mean, do you know, the more I say to you, why would we want to ignore it? The more obvious it becomes. Life's a lot easier. Life's a lot easier if you can turn off that noise. You might remember it every now and then. You might wake up in a cold sweat at 4 o'clock in the morning, but for the other 23 hours a day, you're either asleep or not thinking about it. Why does it work? The threat we are facing is not registering on anything like the scale that it should. And if it hasn't registered yet, I wonder if it ever will. And I don't know what it's like to be in the middle of it. If you're in Greece, for example, you are supposed to register your phone with the authorities so that you can receive emergency alerts. That's quite important because the thing about wildfires is they're wild. And fires, word fans. But they can take you by surprise. You know, you can think you're fine when you go to bed and wake up the next morning and the fires are either round the corner or worse. You see them move across islands, depending on where you're staying. So I would really recommend you to do that, if you're heading out to that part of the world, or if you're there now. You've got a prime minister writing on social media that anyone who lost possessions should know that the state will be by their side. So you have got familiar European territories going up in flames at a rate and on a scale that we have never seen and never thought we would. But here we are, turning the page. Moving on, not looking up. How does that work? How does that work? Martha's in Barnstaple. Martha, what do you think?
Hello, James. Hello. I'm very excited to speak to you.
Oh, no. Oh, no, the pressure's on now. Oh, well, I hope it's not an anti-climax, Martha. I'll do my best to live up to your entirely unreasonable expectations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the effort. So I've got quite a simple point, but it's probably got lots of elaborate things that I could attach to it. But essentially, I think the reason that we're not doing anything about it is systemic individualism.
Mm.
I went and watched a really interesting play last night. Is it all right if I say the name?
Yeah, of course it is.
It's 3 Acres and a Cow. They're a great couple. They've been doing it for 12 years. And they tell you the whole history of land enclosures from 1066 all the way up to now. And watching this, I realised that our history in England was a blueprint for our colonialism across the world. And what we've done is we've created a country of very competent individuals. And listening to them talk about the Pole riots, the Peasants' Revolt, I think it was in 13-something, possibly earlier, I can't remember the date. People were in villages and they saw a taxman and they got angry and they went to the pub and they moaned about it and they went to the baker and they moaned about it and they talked to their family and they moaned about it. We're now in a situation where we live in our little boxes and we're all very separate. So the media that I see on Monday that makes me angry, upset or terrified about the environmental issue, my friends might not have seen it. So if I then go and see them on a Wednesday and I've forgotten half the information and I'm not as angry, I can't really have a conversation with them in that moment. And then if we're not physically together, we can't look each other in the eye and go, this is something that really matters to you. This is now something that really matters to me. And that's where the momentum starts. And that's where you get people march in large groups on London. And we have done marches. I've been part of marches. I've set up marches. But the people that are in power that can make changes aren't afraid of us in the way that they were then.
Why do... I mean, is it deliberate then? I haven't seen this play, but you're not actually the first person to recommend it on the programme. I must, and I can see now that it is... It's on a sort of constant tour, isn't it? A history of land rights and protest in folk song and story. It sounds right up my street. But
is it really beautiful?
Is it a deliberate conditioning of the population, or is it just a consequent? So, you know, I set out to make as much money as possible, and it turns out, oops, a daisy, that's what I had to do in order to do so. Chicken and egg, almost. Not three acres.
Very much so.
Right.
It seems that the way to make money is to exploit people, and people are more likely to be exploited if they think they're alone,
yes.
Pretty much. And I think that the climate crisis is just a perfect example of a problem that we can't overcome, and it is rooted in this individualism.
We can think of other things where individualism has been overcome, can't we? You can mobilise people to vote to become the first population in history to impose economic sanctions on itself. You've got, I mean, admittedly the numbers are relatively small, but some people in powerful positions clearly think they can mobilise protesters and or rioters this summer on a scale that will bring about societal damage. You'd have thought that a threat to our very existence would be a wonderful antidote to systemic individualism.
Yeah.
And the Peasants' Revolt, I'm told, was terrible for foreigners.
I think one of the aspects that we miss is that people voting for Brexit, someone was making a lot of money.
Somebody
Whereas
somewhere.
The people that might be making a lot of money are probably smaller, more humble, much... kinder entities or companies that maybe don't exist with a big footprint at the moment, and so they can't drive that change in the way that others might.
So you come out of the theatre changed, or you were already on side before you went in and just now have a better understanding of what's happened?
Yeah, I think that it was the key to unlocking a deep sense of understanding, because I've been... part of the climate crisis movement since I was, you know, single digits. I've been on marches since I was a wee baby.
Why do you think that is?
I think I just don't have the information. It was...
No. Why did you sign up so young? What was different about your childhood people listening?
That was watching the news. My parents had me watching the news from very, very young, so I remember watching all of the cows being burnt. And that was a real formative... moment for me, and that's when I started to learn about the environment, and that's when I understood all of you know, started to understand all of the impacts we have.
Well, that's part of that's
nature and
part of what I'm struggling with, isn't it? So you can have 100 people exposed to exactly the same experience, and you can have 100 different reactions. And the one I'm most interested in is the people who are failing to react, and the fact that you did, the fact that you reacted so emotionally, so viscerally to that footage, while so many of us watched exactly the same stuff, and I'm going to keep using this phrase because it really works, just turned the page, is going to be at the heart of understanding what we're talking about this hour. But I'm not sure there's ever going to be a skeleton key, a Rosetta Stone, something that I could take now or do now in order to have the reaction to the footage that Martha saw when she was a child that Martha had when she saw it. I guess it's because most of us don't have that reaction. And the same will be true of the fires. Some people looking at them will be terrorized, terrified. I can't believe that it's entirely unassociated with mental health issues, particularly among young people. When you hear Martha describe it like that, if you are more likely, more built, if you like, constructed in a way to respond to this sort of imagery with fear, then that's going to underpin, that's going to make contributions to your mental health. And that's another reason not to talk about it, because you don't want people to feel awful. There's a million reasons why you might look away, why you might turn the page, why you might not look up. But until we start chipping away at them, things will only get worse, to paraphrase D. Ream. It's coming up, well, it is 11:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The dancing stopped and the horror began. Three innocent girls were murdered at a Taylor Swift dance class 12 months ago tomorrow. Failed by the glaringly incompetent Prevent Counterterrorism Programme.
There are grave questions about how this network of agencies failed to identify and act on the risks.
The killer also ordered a deadly weapon with ease.
He was easily able to order a knife. That's a total disgrace.
12 months on, I'll be asking, Southport, can we be assured it could never happen again?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow. Tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Feel the thunder of hooves, the tension as they race past, your heart in your chest, that split second of silence. Before the roar of the finish, that glorious Goodwood feeling. Qatar Goodwood Festival, presented by Visit Qatar, July 29th to August 2nd. Book now.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair, and if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers. Where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one. Where every little thing you do makes a big difference. Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 11:48. It is an Upton Sinclair quote, I think. It's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. And that might explain some of the engines of influence when it comes to the question of why we are not more terrified by what we're seeing in Europe at the moment, namely the wildfire. Infernos is the correct word to use. Biblical scenes is one of my favourite phrases. But I am not being holier than thou for once. I'm not sitting here going, why can't everybody else see things as clearly as I can? Because I'm part of the problem here. I'm not one of the evangelists. I'm not one of the people pointing out the problems and insisting that everybody change or wake up. I'm part of the problem. I'm one of the sheep. And I don't quite get it. I really don't. But I do think this is good from Jimmy. This is alarmingly similar to your previous hour, James. When I took on a guy talking rubbish about climate change, he said, I bet you took the vaccine. It's the four horsemen of the idiocalypse. That's nice. Trump, Brexit, climate change, vaccines and immigration. Trump, Brexit being one horseman of the idiocalypse. Why do all the same people share the same views on these topics? Answer, internet propaganda. Which leads me to a story in the Times yesterday about a young lad who has been terribly ill with measles. Unvaccinated child to have fallen seriously ill from the disease. And do you know what Mum has to say? I had always foolishly put measles into the same category as chickenpox, which is, I now know, wrong. In hindsight, I should have done a lot more research into it and been more aware of everything. Something there, isn't there? The thing about people who say, I've done my own research, is that miraculously, it's always ended up leaving them exactly where they wanted to be before they did any research at all. Because what research do you do into vaccines if not speak to the people who've dedicated their lives to working in that field? Or indeed public health in general? Have a look at the national, the local authorities and work out why on earth they would want anybody to do something that prevents them from getting terrible diseases for terrible reasons, for bad reasons. I fell for the anti-vax lies, then measles put my son in hospital. Something there. Is there something there in answer to the question of why we are not more terrified by terrifying things? And we are easily terrorised by terrible people. Amber's in Bourne in Lincolnshire. Amber, what would you like to say?
Hello, I too am very excited to speak to you, James.
Oh, it's getting ridiculous now, Amber. I'm going to start blushing. Carry on.
And now, look, I don't know anything about anything.
That makes two of us. That makes two of us. What an incredible coincidence.
I won't use big words like you do, and I'm not surrounded by intellectual professionals all the time, but I just see the real
Are you talking world. About Keith? Carry on. Sorry, I'll stop interrupting you now. I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. You stop putting yourself down and I'll stop interrupting. All right?
No, I mean, I just, it's just listening to all the, you know, intelligent comments about it. And I think it's much simpler.
Yes.
I think it's, I'm neurodivergent and I love to talk about all sorts of things like this to people. But people just, they don't have the ability to take on something this big. You know, it's meaningful, it's deep, it's an issue. And beyond, you know, how they're going to wake, you know, at the end of the week, or how they're going to get their child into school, or how they're going to tell their boss to, you know, give them more money, you know, beyond that, I just think it feels like it's just totally out of our control. And also on that same point, it in a way, it is out of our control because there are huge nations, China, US, who are doing nothing.
China's doing loads, actually.
What we're doing.
I mean, the United States is going in the wrong direction, but China's going to end up leading the world in this field. And it's already doing way, way, way more than most of the coverage, most of the propaganda allows. But that's not, I mean, that's by the by, because the central point psychologically, I can't make any difference, therefore I won't do anything. But that doesn't actually answer my question about why we're not more frightened. Because even if you can't do anything about it, arguably that should make you even more frightened. So here is a terrifying thing that is happening to you. And do you want to know something even more terrifying? There's nothing you can do about it.
So
but we're not more terrified. We're not more terrified then.
But then we're overwhelmed and we just push it to the back of our minds.
Yeah.
Because that's what
we
I
don't
do
look
all the time.
Up.
Something's too big.
We don't look up. We turn the page.
Too big. It's too big. Can't deal. It's other people can get and worry about it.
Yeah.
It's too much for our little existence to be able to contemplate. I really do think that.
And it would be, and so it would take a very brave politician, and a couple have tried and largely failed, to explain to us why we cannot afford to ignore it. We have to look up. We can't turn the page. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be messy. It's going to be ugly. We're going to have to make major changes to the way that we live our lives. But if we don't, it's going to be carnage. It's going to be carnage.
And I don't know that anyone's going to believe a politician when they say it anyway. Maybe that's a problem, because if we believed the people that were, you know, I mean, the social media or the people that are influential in young people's lives, you know, maybe that's where we need to be going. And so David Attenborough will have an effect on me.
Trust the scientists. David Attenborough would be a good example. But yeah, Al Gore, albeit that he was a politician, he led the line on this. And again, it looked for a moment as if he was going to make really, really meaningful differences. But that ship sailed. I love the film he made. Because what it did was address a lot of what you've just mentioned, Amber. It actually acknowledged the fact, and we're going back more than 10 years, I think, now. He made two, didn't he? And you can only do this, you can only make the change that needs to be made by recognizing and appealing to the things that make us less susceptible to changing. So I always remember there was what I would call a redneck. I don't know if that's an offensive phrase, but I think they used it themselves to describe themselves in the film, Republican mayor of a town that had a coastal exposure. And his argument had nothing to do with polar bears or hugging huskies. It was all to do with the economic health of his population, of his voters. So they needed to do loads of things to address future climate change. They needed to build things, you know, to invest in things, infrastructural investment, because climate change was coming. And it means that the town will be better equipped economically in the future than towns that haven't made these decisions, that haven't done these things. So you're appealing to a form of self-interest. So we're almost back to the systemic individualism that the earlier caller referenced. And that caller, of course, had just been to see 3 acres and a cow, which I can tell you, if you Google it, you'll find out that they are on tour. And nobody has encouraged me to do that except that call, looking at everything from the Norman Conquest through to the Peasants' Revolt and right up to contemporary issues, enclosures, Industrial Revolution. I can't say now, as a 53-year-old man, all the stuff they never teach you in schools, because they don't want you to know about how close this country has come in the past to actually completely upending the status quo. Kett's Rebellion would be one of my favourites, just outside Norwich. But they may well teach it in schools now. So one thing that all 53-year-old men should agree on is that we should stop saying, no, well, they don't teach you that in schools, unless we've recently been to school, which would be, for many of us, quite weird. Cab's in Cambridge. Cab, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think the analysis of Al's been excellent, and I wouldn't disagree with any of it, but I would add something.
Go on.
You ask why we don't feel it, and
yes.
I'm answering you from my living room, where I've got heating and air conditioning and artificial light.
Air conditioning?
We got air con in one room, because in super hot summer, you kind of need it now because of climate change. You don't feel what's happening outside unless you spend a long... You don't feel the changes in our seasons unless you're observing those changes in seasonal patterns. But when I was in my teens, I'd pick up books on foraging and wild foods and various guidebooks to what you'd find. And even by the 90s, they were wrong. The times at which you would find things flowering or fruiting or migrating in and out of Britain were already wrong.
Wow.
And now they're wrong by miles. Now, unless you're actually taking part in activities, like, unless you're going to pick sloes and you're trying to pick them after the first frost, which all the guidebooks say, you don't realise that they're not there anymore. And if you look at the people who are the strongest and loudest voices in the public forum for this, for taking climate change, they did Ambrose. They're your Chris Packens. They're the people who actually are famous and spend time in nature and
it
firsthand.
Yeah, you're right.
And most people don't. Most people never do. A new story about idiots standing next to an ex-hotel complaining about asylum seekers. It's visceral. It's visible.
We lost that. Just to qualify that slightly, they're not all idiots. There are obviously idiots there, but I've read some compelling interviews. We spoke about one woman who's there last week, and I know that probably wasn't your intention, but the notion of why it's easy to inflame us on some issues and not on others is probably onto something. I think we lost the line, Cab, but that notion of connection is absolutely crucial. And oddly, knitting the two together, Dan is in Dis, which has indeed been the focus of the kind of reports that we were talking about in the first hour of the programme. Dan, what do you want to say about Dis? Sorry.
Hi. Yeah, no worries. Good morning, James. First time caller, long time listener, so welcome. I'm a little bit late.
It's only me. It's only me. No more diss jokes, I promise you diss. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Carry on.
So, I work in the conservation sector. I've worked on both sides. I previously was a warden,
yes,
working on nature reserves, and now I work in community engagement. So from my experience of working with the community,
yeah,
It's mainly the main reason why people aren't as scared as they should be is because they've got too many exterior pressures as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we're essentially in another cost of living crisis. We've got, some people, like you say, are concerned about immigration, whether rightly or wrongly. It's too much for people to handle.
And also, my house isn't going to burn down tomorrow, is it?
Exactly. So I recently went to a climate event, which was very, very eye-opening because it was led by an Americas professor from Anglia Ruskin University.
Mm.
And he had done some studies with the IUCN, which is the European and International Board on Extinctions and,
yes,
reintroductions. He found that over 60% of people are concerned about climate change.
Right.
But on average, that same 60% of people don't believe that it's their issue to fix.
That's the magic link, isn't it? If you could find somebody who was capable of drawing a line between those two things or building a bridge between those two things, then you would be, at least you'd be moving in the right direction. Why do you think it is, briefly, Dan? Why do you think it is possible to care deeply about something while simultaneously thinking it's not worth doing anything about it?
I think it's because you want to believe in the next generation. You want to believe that there is still going to be a future, that,
yeah,
it's impossible that the human race can die out. We've survived through two world wars, an almost nuclear apocalypse.
Mm.
We will find a way to survive. But the issue is not necessarily just about the human race. How much of a planet will be left even if we survive? Like, a lot of people talk about climate change, and it's a massive issue. But we've also got issues with biodiversity loss.
Yeah.
I mean, we've lost over. I'll give you an example. Skylarks.
Yes.
We, in between 1990 and 2005, we lost 90% of our UK population because of changes in farming practices.
I think you've described me a bit. I think you do, don't you? You just think, come off it. Look at what we've done. We put a man on the moon. We'll get, someone's going to do this. Someone's going to work it out.
Yeah.
Sad about the skylarks. And of course, there'll be someone listening who says, well, who cares about skylarks? I don't even like skylarks. But that's the whole point about the environment, isn't it? About diversity.
Yeah.
And about the interrelation of things. Thank you for that, Dan. I'm trying to remember the name of that fish and chip shop in the middle of this. Can you remember the name of it?
Yeah, it's Victoria Fish Bar,
yes.
And then there's also Field Green Fish Bar. I barely go to either, to be honest.
It's Fair Green, I think, in this, isn't it?
Yeah, Fair Green, yeah, you're right.
I like a man who knows his way around the fish and chip shops of his hometown, but you spoilt it a bit by letting somewhere, probably for sustainability reasons. It's 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Keir Starmer and Donald Trump are meeting in Western Scotland with trade and the Middle East on the agenda. The discussions are taking place at the President's Turnberry Golf Resort in South Ayrshire. Both leaders are under pressure to get more aid into Gaza. The Business Secretary, Jonathan Reynolds, says the Prime Minister will also want to discuss ceasefire talks.
The US has played a key role in the two ceasefires that we had already seen in this conflict. But what we all want to see, which is a real end to it, a real process towards a proper peace deal, a peace settlement, I mean, that is the prize. That is what everyone wants to see.
The Lionesses are heading back to England after their historic victory over Spain at Euro 2025. Events to mark their second successive European Championship title will begin with a Downing Street reception later. An open-top bus parade will take place in London tomorrow. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC they showed the best of England last night.
There were a few nervy moments yesterday, and I have my head in my hands with my daughter maybe not scarred in the way that parents' generation are by penalty shootouts. But it was absolutely amazing afternoon, and I'm so proud of the Lionesses.
The Royal College of Nursing is expected to overwhelmingly reject a proposed 3.6% pay rise. The ballot result, due to be confirmed later in the week, raises the prospect of industrial action by nurses in England. Resident doctors are midway through a five-day strike in their pay row. Thailand and Cambodia have agreed to an immediate and unconditional ceasefire. There have been 5 days of cross-border fighting, with at least 33 people killed on both sides. The truce follows talks in Malaysia. Pharmacy leaders have warned the booming demand for weight loss jabs may be unsustainable. An industry body has called for supplies to be carefully managed to ensure they benefit those most in need. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.16. That's down 3. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places staying dry and bright this afternoon, but some showers developing in places, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 12 is the time, and my goodness me, don't we owe a debt to the Lionesses for giving us something nice to talk about for at least an hour this week. So that's 2 hours that aren't going to involve doom and gloom, given the inevitable, well, I mean, God willing, that Mystery Hour rolls around come Thursday. And you know I do spend my life searching for things that might lend themselves to a slightly more light-hearted conversation than we would otherwise have. And I found one towards the end of last week, but I just didn't feel I could justify it in the circumstances. It was a story about people getting stuck in things. And I would have done, I think, if I'd had a prevailing wind. If I'd had the wind in my sails, I think I might have tried to launch a phone-in on question on who has been stuck in the most ridiculous place. The winner in the actual news story was a cat flap. And it's easy to know how that has happened. I would suggest drink had been taken and keys had been lost. And that is probably what prompted somebody to try to get into their own home via the cat flap. And it's not hard to see how it failed. But getting stuck would be quite interesting, because you always think if you can wriggle into something, you can wriggle back out of it again. But anyway, I'm not doing that. I'm just reminding you that sometimes a story does lend itself to a light-hearted exchange. Did you know? I wonder if you knew this. What happened to women's football in 1921? Do you know? I've got a wonderful feeling that we had an almost identical conversation to the one we're about to have now. Last time we won the Euros. The defending champions retained the title last night, and we had such an interesting conversation. But do you know what happened to women's football in 1921? The 5th of December, to be precise, 1921. It's such a strange thing to reflect on. Almost 100 years ago, just over 100 years ago, 104 years ago, that's math days, the FA, the Football Association, because it existed even then, banned women's football from its grounds. So they issued an edict that stated no member clubs of the FA could let women's teams play in their grounds. 5th of December 1921, the FA essentially banned its members. Well, not essentially, it did ban its members from hosting women's games. Why? There's a few theories. The money that was being made they said was being spent frivolously when it should have been going to charity. No evidence of that. Men's Games didn't need to donate their profits to charitable causes, so quite where that argument came from, nobody knows. There was a question of delicacy, a perception that women shouldn't be engaging in this sort of thing. That had changed slightly during the First World War, because as more and more men went away to fight, so more and more jobs that would not previously have been done by women were done by women. And you had a deep concern, perhaps, about reversals. So you would ban football in order to ensure that things went back to normal. So you have extreme responses to wartime, including allowing women to step out of the little lady stereotype. But once the war was won, then I'm afraid it's time for Madam to know her place again. So no more football for you, ladies. I think that was probably the biggest part for it, the idea of football being unsuitable for women, and that their delicate nature and their delicate frames should be should make it something that they can't do. I'm trying to remember the name of a woman who, Lily Parr, openly gay, over 6 feet tall, scored over 1,000 goals during her time on a team called Dick Kerr Ladies. There's a comma between Dick and Kerr. Dick Kerr Ladies. They were the sort of unofficial England team. Played over 800 matches. They got beaten about once every 2 years, and they were huge national stars. Big, big, big crowds turned up to watch them play, and that would have been part of the problem for the FA as well. They were in their pomp when the FA decided that the game had become too popular. And also the worry that it was going to take crowds and money out of the men's game. 53,000, Jason. I thought it was higher, actually, Jason, in Epsom. Watched Dick Kerr Ladies play St. Helens Ladies at Goodison Park during World War One. But, yeah, I mean, it was absolutely huge. And then the FA stepped in and effectively banned it. That was in 1921. Do you know when it was lifted? Now, this is where the phone-in comes in. Do you know when it was lifted? Not until 1969. I've seen reports that it was in 1971, actually, but there it is. The idea that women would not be able to play football at FA grounds stayed in place until pretty much the 70s. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. What was it like?
What was it like?
What was it? There's a reason why I do that. I should probably start a clock. We should explain it every now and then, otherwise you might think that I'm weird. But there is a reason why I do that. I may tell you this hour. But it's my favourite question. It cuts to the very heart of what we try to do on the radio every morning. What was it like? Just see the world through other people's windows. I walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. Or at least get a very good description of what it was like to walk a mile in those shoes that you're never going to wear. What was it like as a woman to be really into football when you were young? Because of all the things that we map together under the heading of social change, this must actually be one of the biggest. I think maybe the ban was lifted in 1969, but they didn't actually play in FA grounds until 1971. That might explain the confusion, because quite a few of you have got 1971 in your head as well. What you've presided over, because my eldest is 19 now. I know, can't believe it. And even then, when she was born, women's football was still niche. It was still, I'm not on offer with, unless you sort it out, unless you went for it. And even while I've been doing this job, so my time in this job corresponds almost entirely with my eldest daughter's lifespan. And it was amazing how quickly we moved on from, I hope we never did any, but phone-ins about why women should never be allowed to referee, or why women should never be able to run the... You know, I've even heard phone-ins. I'm sure I never conducted any, warning that, you know, women shouldn't be allowed to join the army because of their menstrual cycles or stuff like that. But it used to be a relatively hardy perennial for radio shows to look at women's involvement in sport and to point out that they will never be as good as men, and they shouldn't be allowed to run the line or ref a female referee. And television studios probably even more than the actual fields of play themselves. being cast as places in which women should have no space. The idea of a woman passing judgment on the men's game was anathema to various dinosaurs in my industry, and yet when you stop to think about it, it's an incredibly stupid position to adopt. Why on earth would being a woman make you a less expert connoisseur of something like football than being a man? So the way the world has turned is actually extraordinary. We touched on Friday on the really massive things that have happened, like the truly civilization-changing moments, whether you want to go obvious with the wheel or slightly less obvious with penicillin or the internet, which is what we were talking about. But the smoking ban is probably the best example I can think of a societal U-turn that you never saw coming. When you were a kid, right, if someone had said to you that smoking in pubs would be banned in your lifetime, you'd have thought they were mad. Obviously, your response to this observation depends largely on your age. But you would have thought they were mad. But they're not going to ban smoking in pubs, let alone smoking in all public places. They're never going to do it. And if I'd said to you that within your lifetime, within 20 years, the whole country will stop to watch the England women's football team playing in an international tournament. It will be on both major channels. It will be on every front page in town. It will be the biggest story in the country. And it's women's football will engender as much enthusiasm as men's. And of course, in some quarters, even more so. You would not have believed me. What else would you put on that list? I've got the smoking ban and women's football. So if you take, say, the last 30 years, you take 1995 as the starting point. Or you could take New Labour as the starting point, couldn't you, if you wanted to make it political. And the biggest changes, the biggest reversals, if you like, or U-turns, or the biggest changes to our shared life together, I think women's football would be on the list. It doesn't matter whether you like it or not, or whether you care about it or not, or whether you think it's important or interesting or not. The attitude of society in general to it has changed so utterly that it's hard to believe what it used to be like. And that's my question for you now, is what did it used to be like? What did it used to be like? So you're in your 40s. What would be the cutoff point? Is it people in their 40s? Or could we go even earlier? If you're in your 30s, then you would have been in 10, teens, 20 years ago, when did it start? When did the oil tanker start to turn around? And what was it like to love football as a girl when you were young? And I wonder how it makes you feel to see today how completely different everything is. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. How do we highlight for younger listeners how completely transformed our country's attitude to women's football has been in the course of our time together? How would you do it? What would you point at? You wanted to play. You loved to go. At the point at which you kind of had boys at school telling you couldn't play with them anymore. What was it? What was it like to love football when you were a girl? And I think we should allow ourselves a little moment of this.
Chloe Kelly to retain England's title. Kelly steps up, it's a hops, give it a jump, and she slams it into the back of the net. England are European champions once again. It's Chloe Kelly, the saviour in the semi-final. She helped save the final, and now she's hit the winning spot kick to make sure that England are European champions once again.
Hanwell's finest there, Chloe Kelly. The golden chip, by the way. I could start doing that, couldn't I? I could recommend a fish and chip shop in every town that comes up in the course of the programme, but the golden chip is actually exceptional and in the heart of Hanwell. But I digress, because what I want to know is what it was like to love football when you were a girl and how you got treated and how different things are now. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BetVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out. They've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing. And then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Redknapp. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Oh, this is good. I've got some little milestones. Again, there is a certain presumption of age here, but Gregory's Girl. Remember Gregory's Girl? Probably not, depending on how old you are. Beautiful film. John Gordon Sinclair, Dee Hepburn. Really beautiful film. 1980. And it posited the absolute absurdity of a girl playing football. Not absurdity, but it was really novel, right? Massively novel. So that's 1980. Fast forward 22 years, and you come to Bend It Like Beckham, for which it is reported today there is a sequel in the works. Bend It Like Beckham brought Keira Knightley, of course, to prominence and Parminder Nagra, and it was no longer a novelty. It was still nowhere near where it is today, but I think getting a scholarship to a college in America, it was a path that a young British woman could go down. So that's a 22-year gap. And then another 22 years, all right, 23, but hey, I like symmetry, brings us to 2025, when the whole country stops to watch the England women retain their international title. So what changed in your life in the course of that journey? So that's from 1980 to 2025. You want to go back beyond 1980. I suspect the change has been even more profound. In fact, you go back to beyond 1971... when women were allowed to play football in FA grounds once again after a near 50-year ban, then the question of how much things have changed or what things were like, it was Claire Grogan, wasn't it, in Gregory's Girl, forgive me. The question of what things were like then when you were young as a girl who loved football compared to what they're like now becomes even more acute. 0345 6060973. Claire's in Greenwich. Claire, what would you like to say?
Hey, James. I actually called and then I hung up.
Why?
Because I thought, oh, I'm not sure if my experience... I got emotional speaking to your producer.
Oh.
So, I love football.
Yeah.
Football is my thing. I come from a family where my dad is a very big Crystal Palace fan. My brother loves football. I love football.
Oh, hang on. We're just going to try and sort your phone line out. Okay, I definitely want you to come back, not least because... you hung up and then found the courage, if that's the right word, to ring back in again. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. I'll just try and fix up Claire's line while I talk to Simone, who's in Willesden Green. Simone, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, gosh, because, yeah, I'm in my 50s, and I used to love football when I was a child growing up, and it was always deemed to... I was the only girl who used to play... with the boys at school,
yes.
And when I used to go to youth clubs, and I used to go to youth clubs and these children's camps. I used to love playing football.
And what happened?
I would love to learn to play football properly. I'm a vivid Tottenham Hotspur supporter, so I always remembered it was never seen to be the lady thing to do, was to be able to play football. It was seen to be there's some clear discrimination that thought that it was only a boys' game, but I never thought that.
Well, obviously you didn't, but it did kick in eventually. When did it start raising eyebrows? Or did it raise eyebrows from the start?
Really, from the start, you know, I went to a Jewish school, so that didn't help.
And why
not? At home, you know, when I was at home, you know, football was.
Oh, you just mean some things are for boys and some things are for girls.
Yeah.
So it would have been the same at my Catholic school, I think.
Probably. Yeah.
Just
but
that
it was
idea.
Also the same. Yeah, and it was also the same. Like, you know, with my parents, my brother was, and my dad was a vivid Arsenal supporter.
Right.
I was a vivid Tottenham supporter. So, you know, I was the only girl who used to go to football.
So when did you start? When did you start feeling actual disapproval? Do you think? How old would you be?
Really, when I started, you know, I was in my 50s, remember, you know, I'm in my 50s. So really, when I began to be interested, probably the age of 8, 9, I began to get interested.
So you had to really love it to put up with the people disapproving then. You had to kind of almost love it more. So a girl who quite liked it now would be able to go much further than you did in order to stick with it in the face of disapproval and expectation. You'd have to absolutely love it. When did you stop playing?
Oh gosh. I haven't actively, you know, not wanted to play football, but if there was a game of football out there.
When did you last turn out for a team?
Well, I didn't really play as a team. I just played for fun.
Just couldn't even then the opportunities weren't there.
Well, there wasn't the opportunities there to be able to play for.
You make me sad. I don't know if that's a fair response, but I've just got this image of the path not taken where, you know, you could have been, it could have been a huge part of your life formally as opposed to just socially.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. But I also, you know, was a vivid Tottenham supporter and I remember.
You can still go, but there's a difference between going and playing. Final question. When did the boys tell you that they wouldn't play with you anymore?
I've never had an issue. I've never had an issue with boys not playing, you know, or in the camp leaders. I've never had that issue. I was the only girl who, you know, who
how good were you?
Just wanted to play football.
How good were you?
Gosh, going back, I was quite okay. But I never had any training.
And that's,
so
I mean,
never,
now you
I
do it at primary school. No, now you'd be doing it at primary school. You could do, I mean, there's some real sadness here. I think that is why Claire in Greenwich was described herself as getting emotional. Where were we, Claire?
Hi, James. Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's my fault.
I'm sorry. I was a bit emotional. I'm a bit better now. That was probably a good thing that happened. So loved football. Played for the boys. Was actually, I think I was pretty decent.
Yeah.
There was another girl on my team. She was amazing. So we were both really good with the boys, but then we hit 12 and it was like, okay, you can't play with the boys anymore because this is like serious.
Yeah.
You know, you can't keep playing. And we just took it. And I was getting emotional because I didn't do anything about it.
That period of my life is over. That chapter is closed.
Which I love dance too, and I pursued a career in dancing, but I loved football. And I remember going to the pub and watching football and having men say all sorts of things to me.
Mm.
And I'm actually really good when it's offside. I've got a knife for that. And having to, you know, fight with men and having to say, excuse me, I know my football. I'm very girly, but I also know what I'm talking about. And having that discredit constantly, having to fight back. And I'm really, really pleased that all of that now is, it's kind of like disappeared.
Yeah, so there's a thing,
incredible.
Isn't there? So you can feel a bit of sadness for what you lost.
I am sad about myself, yes.
For what
I am.
You lost, but also you can feel great joy at the fact that.
Absolutely. And I have two kids. I have two boys. Football. And.
Do you play with them?
With them, yes. We play together. We play as a family. We play with the dad. And the little one, he's really good. And he has been enjoying England's successes like I have. And it's been so lovely to see them, both of them actually, but the little one mostly, enjoying England and being part of that. We went 3 years ago, we went to the parade. Well, it wasn't a parade. It was the celebration.
Yes.
And tomorrow we're going to the parade and I'm so excited.
And so little boys or young boys loving the England women's
absolutely
success. That's something
no
really wonderful about that, isn't there?
There's no question. It's like, oh, it's women's. It's not the same. It's like, for them, that's what I love about this game and what the Lionesses have done. For them, it's just football. It's not women's football. It's football.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is a win. I am so, so proud of this team. And I'm so excited. And tomorrow is going to be a great day.
It really is. And you map almost perfectly in the course of your life and your boy's life how completely the oil tanker has been turned around, don't you? Because nothing absolutely you're saying is remarkable to me. And if you'd had daughters, they'd be playing for a local side, probably.
Absolutely.
Is it too late? Do you reckon you could get your boots back on, go and sign up for
it's
a ladies'
too late.
It's never too late, Claire. It's never
40 days.
That's not old. Flipping out. I'm playing tennis later today. Get yourself. We never know. That's not. I mean, someone listening in the Greenwich area may have news of a team for precisely people at your stage of life. It's so lovely, though. There's so few things that I can think that you could put on this list, because we got the smoking ban, and Gary suggested seatbelts, and he's right. Things that have changed that when you were very young, you would never imagine changing. But they're kind of health and safety issues. They're not social attitudes issues. And the way in which this has changed, gay marriage, actually, I suppose, would have to go on the list, although that feels of a slightly different order from women's football. There's the thing that if you had pointed at it, if someone had said to you when you were little, oh, by the way, by the time you're 40, you'll be a mum and your boys will be cheering on the England women's team with at least as much enthusiasm. Well, in fact, they'll be cheering them on rather more because they get better results than the men's team. I wonder how big a part of it that is. Hey, there's a thought. If the men had been winning tournaments left, right and centre for the last 20 years, then would women's football have enjoyed quite the season in the sun that it's enjoyed? Because they do have this habit of actually winning things. And I'm afraid we haven't been able to say that about the men for a very long time. This might be true as well. The media, James, have been brilliant. No hype, no husbands or boyfriend stories, no constant it's coming home, no stories about people pulling a sickie or councils taking down flags. The only comparison I've seen with the usual hysteria is people demanding a bank holiday. Well, that was Ed Davey. That's the sort of populism for nice people. Ed Davey demanding a bank holiday for England. Lots of bank holidays do not apply across the whole of the United Kingdom. Let's hope the media can learn and now start doing the same for the men's game. That would really make a difference, actually. It's 12:30. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer is in Western Scotland for talks with President Trump at his golf resort. The humanitarian situation in Gaza and steel tariffs are expected to feature in their wide-ranging discussions. The Lionesses are due to return to England after lifting their second successive European Championship trophy. There will be a Downing Street reception this afternoon, followed by an open-top bus parade in London tomorrow. Thailand and Cambodia have agreed an immediate and unconditional ceasefire following peace talks. It follows 5 days of cross-border fighting with at least 33 people killed and thousands displaced. LBC weather, dry and bright with sunny spells for most this afternoon. A few more showers developing, a high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
Vodafone's new customer service is a little bit different. It's called Just Ask Once. Message them on the Vodafone app. You deal with one person and they keep you updated until it's sorted, so you can get on with your day. Walk his ears then. Just ask once. Customer service made easy from Vodafone, the nation's network.
Available via your My Vodafone app. Messaging service only. Exclusions apply. Vodafone UK supporting the nation since 1984. More details, vodafone.co.uk/network.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident. We laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Who's a good human? Alex is.
Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex, as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 12:32. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I like this from Chris. I thought you were going absolutely wild missing your junctions today, James. But then I realised I'd taken a phone call just after 10 a.m. and I've spent the whole show 7 minutes behind. So that's it. Of course, if you're listening on catch-up, as opposed to the pod, well, I do quite a lot of time references. Do you think I do too many time references? It's one of the things that I was taught when I started doing this for a living. You sort of use them almost as punctuation marks sometimes. 12:33. You said that 2 minutes ago. Well, obviously I didn't. 2 minutes ago I'd have said 12:31. Don't be silly. That's not an opinion. That's counting. But I don't know. I don't even notice myself doing it some of the time. But I think it's helpful. Unless you're listening on catch-up, in which case it could probably discombobulate you quite sincerely. Anyway, Chris, good to have you on board. 12:33 is the time. Football. This sort of curious, bittersweet is the right word, isn't it? What did that caller say earlier? Sad and glad. Bittersweet sense of the path not taken by you as a younger woman, as a girl, because you loved football, but the path in front of you was closed. They shut it down in 1921, by the way. Long before you were born, obviously. But that is when a resurgent game of football, women's football, being huge, drawing enormous crowds up and down the country during the First World War. And the FA got a bit spooked, were worried that the men wouldn't get the gates or the crowd might be a bit distracted. I remember even I fell for the idea that, well, there's no point watching this because the England women's team wouldn't even be able to beat a mediocre men's club. But that's not the point, is it? It's a bit like saying that you don't enjoy watching women's tennis because a top woman player would struggle against the top 200th best male player. And it's just two completely different things. It's, the same species, but the pleasure of watching the game last night and commenting on it properly, having conversations about good moves and mistakes and bad moves, it's just, I can't believe how completely and indeed how quickly the conversation has changed, the tone, the whole feeling around it. And it does lead me to wonder what it feels like to look at what it's like now and compare it to what it was like when you were young and brilliant at football or hugely enthusiastic about it, but somehow not allowed to do what girls and young women today can do. Lucy is in Southampton. Lucy, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi. Hello. Yeah. I guess my point is I felt a bit emotional seeing them win. I didn't realise I was going to feel emotional. Cool. As a sort of 9-year-old, I played in a little school team, which only existed because one of my friend's dads was like, no, I'm going to head this up if we can, because there's only a boys sort of team around. So we did play against a few schools, but only because another dad volunteered to do it.
Because he wanted his daughter to play, and there would have been no opportunity unless he did it himself. Gosh.
Yeah, and I just watched it, and I was watching it with my daughters, and they were so excited. My daughter's actually part of a little Saturday team it's not a team, it's just like a play for fun kind of thing. Yeah. But she loves it, and she was really excited to see this match. And I said, look, you know, these women are talking to you and they say, you can do it, you know, you can do this. She was like, they're talking to me. I was like, yeah, you and all the girls like you. When I was younger, like, it's not that I didn't realise that there was just nothing. It wasn't like I was being told not to do it. It was just...
You ran out of road.
You didn't do it.
You ran out of road. There was nowhere to go. There was no road there.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Definitely.
How good were you?
I mean, I wouldn't know, really, because
I felt like
I was good at it, but there was no one to say, there's no scout to say, oh, she's got a really good foot there and her footwork's really... I felt good at it. We felt good as a team. All the parents came to support us, my parents, and it was lovely. But I went to secondary school, and there was bits and pieces, but it just wasn't
encouraged. It wasn't a route that you could take down professionally, or, you know, I didn't have lots of boys saying, oh, you can't play football, because I could keep up with them. Sure. It was just, I don't know, it just faded.
It wasn't there. I mean, it's a social... No. Why do you think it changed? Can you think? I'm trying to think back.
To me, it's only felt like it's changed in the last 5 years in terms of, like, people being like you say, I think someone said, it's not women's football, it's just football. Like, boys being inspired by it too. Because I feel like the women have shown how much grace they can play with as well. And I think that's really inspiring to watch. You know, they're very skilled. They're very talented. They're also playing with, like, grace that can be rolled out across the board for children.
They were so nice to each other at the end. The England and Spain, the Spanish. Yeah. There was a real... I know, you know, men swap shirts and hug as well. I'm not suggesting for a minute that they don't, but I love the way you've used the word grace. It's an underused word, actually, and it really fits. Not a word you hear often in the context of football.
I think because my daughter actually picked up on the fact that, you know, the Spanish team were very disappointed.
Yes.
Said, well, yeah, you know, that is right. You know, they've all worked really hard, and of course you would feel upset by not getting to that sort of, you know, the gold-winning part. But, you know, look, we can celebrate their success, both of them, because they've gotten to the finals. And it was just brilliant. We watched right to the end with the celebrations and everything, and she was fascinated by it. She'd never seen anything like that.
No, it's really special. And could you be tempted back? Because ever since the Claire came on a moment ago and talked about being too old at 40 to get her boots back out, I've been inundated with messages from people playing for women's teams well into middle age.
I hear some of my other friends that play netball and things, and in their sort of late, I'm sort of mid to late 30s. So, you know, if there's something around,
life changing for you as well as for the daughter. I love it. I really hope somebody listening to this today decides to make a few phone calls to get online and have a look into it. I tell you what, talking about getting it. Thank you, Lucy. That was lovely. Talking about getting online, Luton Football Club has an extraordinary... Someone's just sent me a link to this. Let me try and say thank you in person. So this is from Jago. Luton Football Club trying to track down the stories behind illegal football matches. This is going back 7 years. They launched this search around Halloween of 2018. But there's a picture of women running out at Kenilworth Road. Do you recognise any of the players running out of the tunnel? I think you have to do it in a Chumley Warner type voice, don't you? Because it's from 1935. Do you recognise any of the players running out of the tunnel? Perhaps your great-grandmother told you tales of the time she played at Kenilworth Road. Do you have an old match programme sitting in a box at home? If so, we need your help. And they've got football, as you'd expect. There's some boys hanging over the tunnel, and some young women running out with in the old school football kit and carrying footballs. And because of the ban that was brought in 1929 and not lifted until 1971, that would have been an illegal football match at Kenilworth Road in 1935. The newspaper advertisement. It was the bizarre BAZAAR Cup final between Woolworths and Marks and Spencers. The second game. Good Lord, this is very much of the age. It was widows versus spinsters. Who'd turn out for that? Widows versus spinsters on a Saturday afternoon at Kenilworth Road. You can find it online. I'll share it from my Blue Sky account, just in case you find that kind of stuff as interesting as I do. Emily's in Hackney. Emily, what would you like to say?
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm calling. I'm going back a bit to, like, 2007. So in my 30s now, but in 2007, me and my sister, we just loved football growing up, and we were completely mad about football, and we entered a competition in the New Shopper, which was our local paper where we live, and we got to be mascots for the England ladies, and basically, they called up my mum, and they said, oh, well, one of your girls has won, but we've had so few entries, they can both just turn up and, you know, walk out with the team. It was really good, and back then, you know, I think it was just met with apathy from, you know, my friends, and no one really cared. And
oh, that's rich. So what, this is about 20 years ago?
Yeah, about 20 years ago, yeah.
So even then it wasn't, because it was trying to pin down, we're not going to get a precise date on it, but that was very niche even then. It's quite a big deal to be the mascot for the Lionesses, but not a big deal to your mates at all.
Well, that's what I thought, and I was telling everyone, but everyone was just like, no.
Oh, that's cruel.
You, these women, like, they were like David Beckham to me.
You're going to be.
But my parents used to have to take us everywhere to see, like, the women play, like, all random stadiums. We played football ourselves. They'd drive us all over. And I think there was a real barrier to, like, women be able to take part in the sport. Like, my dad would have to drive us all over Kent to play matches on a weekend because there was not enough teams to play where we were.
And there's a bit of chicken and egg as well. Where did your and your sister's passion for it come from? Did we just kicking it around in the back garden or, I mean...
Yeah, like, I can't remember, to be honest with you. We just played football from, I don't know, when as soon as we could walk, basically. My sister still plays football now. And she's been in a lot of teams where, you know, they've entered financial difficulties and the women's setup is the first thing to be cut back.
That's true.
She's had two teams disbanded, which she's been part of.
Gosh.
She's got a lot of resilience, I think, to have made it this far and kept playing.
Well, for that generation, you needed to. I hope it's a lot easier now. But without, I think, mum and dad somehow buying into it, then it probably wouldn't have happened for you either, for you and your sister either, would it? If mum and dad hadn't been so behind you.
Yeah. Definitely not. It took a lot of their time. And I think the good thing now is that, like, I see all videos on Instagram and that of, like, boys cheering the Lionesses as much as the girls. And for kids, it's just normal that you see almost both teams on the same level and in the same level of enjoyment. And I think hopefully it can't go backwards now, so it's only going to keep getting better.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully put. And that idea of young people not making the distinction, because however enthusiastic I may be for the women's game, somewhere inside, the way that I'm wired from my childhood means I'm not quite ever going to feel the same or see it the same. And yet, for a young person, particularly because you have this experience of actually winning things, for a young person, it's probably easier to support the England women than it is to support the England men. Or it certainly doesn't feel in any way strange. I should give a shout to Harriers, actually. Harriers women, who I've never seen Harriers women play, to my eternal shame, but I do know that in their very, very first season, they won a league and cup double, which, only going back to 2016, I think. I could have got that wrong, but that's an interesting year for a club like Kiddy to launch its women's team about 9 years ago. That perhaps gives us, again, a little bit of an idea of where the changes kicked in, what the major changes were. So I'm going to put that on my list as well of milestones in the women's game. 1980, Gregory's Girl, which starred Claire Grogram, but in which Dee Hepburn was actually the female football player. 2002, Bend It Like Beckham. 2016, Kidderminster Harriers Women is inaugurated. And then 2025, we defend our European title against Spain. 12:45 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Prime Minister meets Donald Trump shortly at the US President's Turnberry Golf Course. Tee off at 1.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes.
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. Bored off to get drinks on my own. It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and cat. Oh, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
This summer, deciding between eating, drinking and chatting is over, thanks to the new Tipple Topper from Waitrose. Our mini charcuterie boards sit on top of your wine glass and come with delicious nibbles, such as Milano salami, Iberico cheese wedges, tangy pickles, olives and crunchy bruschetta bites. Perfect for mingling without juggling plates. Let your summer side out with Waitrose. Selected lines and stores subject to availability.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centreline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required, terms apply, see website.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:47, and we shouldn't laugh, but we will. Donald Trump and Keir Starmer have been trying to conduct some sort of impromptu press conference at Turnberry, which I think is the golf course Trump owns, in the last few minutes. And I suspect that an unimpressed local has attempted to intervene. Listen, there's a slim chance it was meant to happen like this, but it seems unlikely.
I'm looking forward to getting people fed right now. For me, that's the number one position. Because you have a lot of starving people. You have people that, you know, the United States recently, just a couple of weeks ago, we gave $60 million. That's a lot of money. No other nation gave money. I know the Prime Minister would if he knew about it, and he
The bagpipes have now stopped. So what I mean by that is that the conversation is actually continuing. They're still there on the steps of the golf club. But I don't know if anyone's got the footage of that. Was the bagpiper accosted? Do you think they got him? Do you think they got to the bagpiper? But I think it highly unlikely that that was a scheduled or scripted part of the ceremonials this afternoon. Sheila, I'm already minded to talk more about this visit, this meeting between Trump and Starmer. So stay tuned for that. And of course, the US-EU trade deal has also been agreed, although, as with everything Trump does, very short on detail. I don't think this is very good news for the EU. In fact, people I rather respect and admire are making the point that they do appear to have bent over or being bent by Donald Trump. We shall have to wait and see. If you're going to be optimistic, maybe look for detail. Don't make your judgments until you've got the detail in front of you. But the last thing Europe should be doing at the moment is pandering to bullies. Actually, it's put very well here by Simon Nixon has written a very good article about it, and there's a political scientist called Nikolai von Ondarza pointing out that European leaders are underestimating what it will do to their publics to be humiliated by Trump, like the NATO summit and Rutte's daddy strategy. Maybe the outcome could have been worse, but losing pride and being humiliated is also a price that is paid. So if I'm recommending Substacks a lot at the moment, but if you want to read more from Simon Nixon, formerly, of course, of the Times, on this, what he describes as a spectacularly one-sided trade deal, then I've just shared that from my Blue Sky account as well, at Mr. James O.B. 12:50 is the time. Back to the football. And note I said the football, not the women's football, which is as it should be. Back to the football and the question of what it was like to love to play when you were young that you then couldn't do. Kay's in Welling. Kay, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Yeah, I was born in 1966, not ashamed to mention that. But so I played football with the boys at school because there wasn't an opportunity for girls to play in a team. And then when I went to secondary school, I was geared towards netball because there wasn't any opportunities for football, which was really sad. So I then had a full career, actually, in professional football, still empowering young women and to play and to work within the game. My daughter then took up the mantle and started playing. But what I really wanted to say as well, she's 25 now, so yeah. When she was about 12, we used to put her team of girls into boys' tournaments throughout the summer in the close season.
Right.
And the dads and the parents used to give them so much stick, we had to pull them out, telling their boys, why are you letting the girls beat you? You know, they're only girls.
So not, not, I mean, women. So
and that's just that short
time ago.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. So again, if we're trying to chart this timeline, 10 years. I mean, something happened or 8 years ago. Something began to shift, I think, perhaps.
I mean, I think, you know, just full circle, James. I know you're really busy, but she's currently in the Caribbean coaching and mentoring young women to take part in football and empowering them to change their lives through the sport. So
that's sensational.
Circle in the way, you know, because she decided not to go pro route because she ended up having a child quite young, but right. No regrets on that. But she's now changing the lives of young women around the world, trying to empower them using football. So last night was incredible for her. I spoke to her early hours because obviously they're 5 hours behind. But
she said
it was an incredible atmosphere, and they were all so delighted.
It changes what she's doing in a way, doesn't it? Because it crystallizes the possibilities. It just sort of, you know, you are on the world stage. And when you were, even her age, when you were your daughter's age, it would have felt unthinkable, wouldn't it?
Well, it was. It was unthinkable.
It would have felt unthinkable that this could happen one day.
Oh, absolutely. Do you know, I mean, I've worked in professional football now, and I've loved it. I've been director in many clubs.
So when did you stop playing? When did you stop playing?
Well, at primary school, James, because at secondary school there wasn't an option. I was netball or hockey.
Netball or hockey.
I was good at both, so I was obviously quite sporty. I don't know how good I would have been at football, but I loved it. But my passion continued for that to be my career. And then to empower women to be the best they can be, whatever. We do women in football conferences. They're very famous around
the country.
But
yeah. Do you work for that organisation, do you?
I don't work for them, but I sometimes guest for them. So I go and talk about my experience through football. But, you know, young girls that want to be accountants or lawyers, they say, well, look, football's not really for us. Well, football clubs do need those roles. And when you put it like that, they love football, but they can't play, but they want to be involved in the game. So it's sort of an all-round... The Lionesses have just changed the landscape for people to think they can be part of football even if they're not playing.
Well, so have you as well, albeit that the Lionesses have got rather more PR than you've managed over the years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I do a similar role to Karen Brady, but I'm not as famous as her, but that's fine.
Lovely.
I don't want to be, actually. But honestly, the changes that we've had for young women, and you know, even if you're not very good at football, but you want to be around football because you love it, there's other options. So,
and again, why should that sound weird? Why should anybody think to themselves... you shouldn't be able to do it as a woman any more than a man who's maybe not that good at the game, but loves it and wants to be involved in it and wants to do something. It's exactly how it should be.
I need to watch my daughter still plays, obviously not as a pro, but she still plays locally, and her children are only 5 and 3, but the 3-year-old is a daughter and she's always got a ball at her feet because
love it,
of her
love
mum.
It, love it, love so, it. There's no downside.
The drum, James.
You're an early adopter. That's what they call it. You're an influencer. I bet you didn't even know you're an influencer, Kay. 12:55 is the time. I've got Togo, who's in Poole. What would you like to say, Togo?
Hiya, James.
Hello.
Yeah, big fan of yours. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, you'll get over it.
My partner will be beaming in the other room. We talk about you all the time.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so I played as a child, but just knocking around with the kids in the park, in the back gardens, whatever. I didn't get the opportunity to play. I tried to try out for a team at the age of 8 because I was desperate to do so. My dad took me along there. They wouldn't even let me try out.
So your dad took you down there and they said, no, she's not coming on. Oh, that's sad, isn't it? What year was that, roughly? Sorry.
I was born in 75 and I was 8, so early 80s, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. And when he put me back in the car and he went back down and spoke to them and said why, and they said, oh, well, we don't have changing facilities for her, so on. Just a load of whatever. And so basically,
and that was
I carried on doing what I was doing. That was kind of it.
For a formal engagement with football, that was slammed in your face almost before you'd knocked on it.
Yeah, and this wasn't, an important Premier League type team. This was just the local knock-around team. And I think from there, I really felt like I was doing something wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And I already knew that it wasn't terribly welcomed because...
There's a real sadness here, isn't there?
People would say, yeah, it was. And I didn't realise how much of that had gotten to me over the years until I more recently started playing again.
Oh.
So I'm now 49 and I've been playing 2 years. I've been playing walking football and it has changed my life. On top of that, I started a team within I think 3 months of starting. Gosh. I started my own team and I've got women coming to me who maybe have never played or maybe have played, but maybe they're getting older and they want to tone it down a bit.
Yeah, sure.
And honestly, the feedback from them is huge. It's so emotional. I mean, I heard women earlier talking to you who were quite emotional.
Why? Because really I'm going to run. I've only got a minute left. But tell me why it has had such an emotional impact on you.
I think, oh God, it's hard to put all that into a minute. But
yeah, right.
I think people realize how much they've been denied in their life and how much they denied to themselves.
Oh.
So I think I spent years and years not really watching football, not really caring. I didn't even know there was a women's league going on and all kinds. And I've had to kind of learn all that anew. But on top of that, to really feel like I've found myself again.
Gosh.
I feel like a better version of myself now. I feel more true to myself. And I think a lot of these women feel the same. They feel like they're getting an opportunity that they never had before. They feel more fulfilled. They feel, I mean, honestly, even my accent has come back a little bit more than it was.
What do you mean?
I feel more myself. I grew up in Birmingham.
Right.
I am a bit of a morpher. My accent
yeah,
does
yeah,
morph.
Yeah, me too.
But I really, yeah, I know, I notice you. but I really
So you mean you'd kind of been bullied almost into with this position that that wasn't the natural you, and now the natural you is bubbling back to the surface in all sorts of other ways not linked to football.
Yeah,
that is one of the most beautiful.
I wouldn't say completely bullied.
I was searching for the right word. Conditioned,
you know,
boxed
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, and we mask these things,
That's
don't we? And
word.
I heard the lady, like Claire, was saying that she's too old at 40.
Nonsense.
Competitive football,
yeah.
Walking football, starts at 40.
There you go, so, Claire. There you heard it here first, Togo. I got to go, Togo. I'm already late. But that is a beautiful, quite a lovely start to the week. That whole hour represents. If you missed any of it, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app. Only a few moments overshadowed by the sound of bagpipes. You can stay up to date on the stories and opinion. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. So do download the LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Everything she said chimed with me completely.
Wasn't that lovely?
Yeah, absolutely. It is conditioning, but it's a kind of abusive conditioning.
Well, that's
by
why
society.
I said bullied.
Yeah.
It isn't quite the right word.
Because I watched the game last night with my brother and his partner, and we, because his telly's better than mine, and we were talking, because he and I obviously grew up together, and we were talking about how that at a certain point, even though I played lots of sports with my brothers, the second we were kind of, you know, 11, 12, 13, different routes.
Society said,
sport,
you go that way.
Yeah. Well, there just weren't any sports available.
Or you don't go anywhere.
Yeah, you don't go anywhere in a particular sport. Yeah,
it's sad,
really
isn't
interesting.
It? Very sad.
It is. I'm going to talk about the Lionesses, it too, myself. Yeah. They're heading home after the big win. It's fantastic, wasn't it? There's a parade tomorrow. Sport, on a more bright note, can really break through the gloom, can't it? And lift us all up, and Lord knows we need it. Let's talk about the pride in England that came through yesterday, not least from Chloe Kelly, who just couldn't stop pretty. The Lionesses are talking about it, so why don't we? At 3, the new party set up by Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana, your party, as it is, I think, still potentially temporarily known. Initial polling suggests 18 to 24-year-olds are keen on hearing more about it. Feel like it might be your party, this your party. But we'll start with Turnbury and the President and the Prime Minister and that High Wire Act moment for Keir Starmer just now.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has arrived at Turnbury ahead of talks with Donald Trump. The Prime Minister and his wife were greeted with bagpipes as they arrived at the resort in South Ayrshire. Both leaders are under pressure to get more aid into Gaza and are also likely to discuss the economy. The US President was asked by reporters about his thoughts on small boat crossings, having previously criticised Europe for its record on immigration.
So I know nothing about the boats.
But if the boats are loaded up with bad people, and they usually are, because, you know, other countries don't send their best. They send people that they don't want. And they're not stupid people. And they send the people that they don't want.
The Lionesses are due to return to England with their second successive European Championship today. They beat world champions Spain 3-1 on penalties in Basel last night. The decisive spot kick was scored by Chloe Kelly, who says it's been a roller coaster year.
There were a lot of tears at full time, especially when I saw my family, because those are the people that got me through those dark moments. Tough times don't last, and just around the corner was a Champions League final, won that, and now a Euros final, won that. So thank you to everyone that wrote me off. I'm grateful.
There'll be a Downing Street reception later, followed by an open-top bus parade in London tomorrow. Ofcom has told LBC it's actively assessing adult websites' compliance with new age checks. They're now required to use highly effective methods to stop children from accessing pornography, but an LBC investigation found dozens are ignoring the rules. The Royal College of Nursing is expected to reject a pay rise of 3.6% when the result of a ballot is revealed later this week. It raises the prospect of industrial action in England. Resident doctors are currently on the fourth day of their five-day strike in a row over their salaries. And some learners are waiting more than 5 months for a driving test. Latest figures show 80% of test centres have the highest possible waiting times. The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency says it's working to improve test booking rules. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 10 points at 91.10. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a few showers pushing in from the northwest this afternoon, turning mostly dry and bright, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. In the last few minutes, the Prime Minister Keir Starmer and the US President Donald Trump have begun talks at Turnberry golf course owned by President Trump. The President greeted Mr. Starmer and his wife Victoria, or Sir Keir, I should say, and his wife Victoria, on the steps of Turnberry. There were the usual niceties, and then followed a pretty high wire act of a press conference. And I say that from Keir Starmer's perspective, it felt like a high wire act, even though he didn't say very much in it. There was a lot that the President said, not least about immigration into Europe, including the UK, that, you know, to describe it as thorny for the Prime Minister is something of an understatement. But let's get a sense of things from Gina Davidson, LBC Scotland political editor. We'll talk to the SNP foreign affairs spokesperson in a few minutes as well, Stephen Gethins. Gina, first of all, this is an unusual setup, isn't it? This is a US president hosting a UK prime minister on UK soil.
Yeah, absolutely, Sheila. It kind of feels like diplomacy has been turned on its head. It would normally be the other way around. If you were a visiting premier from another country, you'd probably be in number 10 and the prime minister would be greeting you there. But instead, we have this event, I suppose is a way to call it, of a holiday that Donald Trump is having here in Scotland and in Turnberry since Friday. And of course, we know he will be going north to Aberdeenshire to his other golf courses later on today. So the Prime Minister and indeed the President of the European Commission coming here yesterday to talk to Donald Trump while he is in the UK and to talk particularly about those international issues. As you say, a high wire moment, I think, for Keir Starmer. All his diplomacy skills are going to have to be finely tuned and ready to deploy as he talks to the President about just what is going on in Gaza, the need to get more humanity humanitarian aid in there. We had a bit of that before they went inside. A few questions from the press. I think it looked like Keir Starmer wished those bagpipes were being played even louder so that we couldn't hear precisely what was going on. But the president was asked about Gaza, and I think we can hear a bit of his response, Sheila.
I don't know. I mean, based on television, I would say not particularly, just because children look very hungry. But we're giving a lot of money and a lot of food, and other nations are now stepping up. I know that this nation is.
It's a humanitarian crisis.
Right.
It's an absolute catastrophe.
Nobody
wants to see that. And I think people in Britain are revolted at seeing what they're seeing on their screens. So we've got to get to that ceasefire. And thank you, Mr. President, for leading on that. And also to just get more and more aid in. And again, America's done a lot on this. A lot of countries have done a lot. We're now working with Jordan on getting direct aid drops in. But this is a desperate situation.
Do you think the ceasefire is even possible?
Yeah, ceasefire is possible, but you have to get it. You have to end it. You're talking about with Israel. You're talking about there, because we have many ceasefires going on.
I think it was interesting to hear Keir Starmer step in there, yeah. Sheila, and intervene in a way using maybe stronger language about what he says is happening. Wade's possibly to describe what is going on in Gaza. And I think that probably gives an indication of where those talks are going to go. But at the same time, praising the president for what he has been trying to do around a ceasefire. As you say, that high wire act of, driving forward for what he wants to get out of President Trump, but at the same time, can we say stroking his ego, perhaps, in a way to ensure that that he gets what he wants out of these talks today? And it was interesting as well to hear a question about immigration to the UK. We know that that's been an issue that's obviously been playing on the president's mind. He spoke about that almost as soon as he landed in Prestwick on Friday. Talked about an invasion of migrants into Europe, and there was a question there about the small boats, and again Keir Starmer trying to explain to the president exactly what that was referring to, and Donald Trump saying, well, if you're stopping immigration and stopping the wrong people, my hats are off to you, although he did say that he knew nothing about the boats.